Education and honorable members who are attending here. The strategic focus areas of NEMISA, all five of them that we're going to talk to, are also derived from the strategic goals of the DOC. From the strategic goals of the DOC, NEMISA fits in on the three of them. It's the strategic goal number 3 from the DOC, strategic goal number 4 from the DOC, and strategic goal number 7. These are the strategic goals that the DOC, which is the Department of Communications, is talking about: acceleration of ICT skills development and access to ICT activities that the DOC and all the projects that the DOC will be rolling out. So on the ICT strategy of the DOC, we come in as the institution that develops the human capital first. So we lay the ground, we do the groundwork first, and then they come and roll out. Our strategic objective number 1, which is to transform NEMISA into the technology and research and development driven organization. We establishing NEMISA as a research center for ICT and creative multimedia. That should start from servicing all the sister SOEs inside in terms of research. The CSIR, Meraka, in Pretoria, they're helping us on developing the research framework and the research objective of the center that we're setting up. The second one is to enhance financial viability and institutional sustainability. Because this strategy is talking to the growth of NEMISA to be out there and to be visible in all provinces, therefore we have to put our house in order, sustainability and financial viability. Number 3 talks about the improvement of efficiency, security, and effectiveness, that all the programs that we're going to design and that we're running currently, for example, the research center that we're setting up, all these structures and units within NEMISA should be talking to the policies and procedures that are relevant to the shareholder and adhering to the PFMA and all policies concerned. Number 4 talks about alignment, the stakeholder relationship. This is very critical because we cannot operate alone as NEMISA in a separate corner. Therefore, the campaign we started last year to engage ourselves in on revising our strategic partnerships with stakeholder partnerships from within the DOC itself and with our sister SOEs, going outside to universities and the industry. And we're hoping come end of this year we'll be having stakeholder partnerships from overseas. We mentioned few of the stakeholders that we are engaged on, not mentioning a lot of them within the DOC that we're partnering with on training. The industry ones is NAB and SASIA there, and SACF. We have revised our subscriptions to those bodies. We're designing short courses that are industry-based. With SASIA, for example, last week, we started a committee that is designing a course in AV installation, which is the basic technical of installing a dish. We're preparing this for the ground that the DOC need to do before the installation of the set-top boxes. So this program course will be dealing on networking, installing a rack on the wall, installing a dish, and troubleshooting. This will be part of NEMISA's contribution to the DSC's rollout of DTT, that when we go out to train all those SMMEs and all those guys out there that are trying to survive but not certificated on installing dishes, this program will give them certifications. With NAB, we're putting up a program on broadcast engineering from their members, the broadcast members. Last week, we said on the community radio committee membership of the NAB. And we're partnering with universities on short courses and mentorship for research from them. Number five is to expand accessibility and reach. This is talking to the visibility of NEMISA to provinces. Most of us will remember that if you go to other provinces, you won't see NEMISA's visibility, because what we're doing now, we're getting youth from those provinces to Gauteng province. So in partnerships with these institutions from provinces, we will be taking NEMISA's visibility to provinces. Last week, we were sitting in East London with the Walter Sisulu University, putting up a program on radio certification that they're running there. I was mentioned the Northwest University Mafikeng campus, they've got an honors degree program in broadcasting. So we're sitting and designing and talking around on how can we partnership on that program. That is why we're also involving the SABC there, to see that in a province where we're not there, we don't have physical structures, we should use SABC structures that are available there. So that's the partnership we're putting with SABC in expanding the reach to provinces. The priorities and changes and challenges, the COO will talk to that. Thanks very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The key priorities for NEMISA for the financial year 2011-12, based on the strategic plan 2011-2014. We've already stated the five strategic objectives, one of which is to enhance our capacity to do market research. So that is one of the priorities, how to develop a research unit within UNISA, within NEMISA, that will be assisting, like the CEO said, sister agencies within the DOC, so that the policy initiatives and decisions should be based on evidence, you know, objective evidence that is well researched. Maybe I must also state that the entity NEMISA has been in existence for just over 12 years, and one of the issues that we need to do with yourselves, the shareholder who's the Department of Communications, is to really do a substantive review. 10 years down the line, what is the value that NEMISA has contributed in ICT? What is the way forward in terms of the emerging priorities within the industry? And how better to reconfigure NEMISA so that we are, you know, optimally placed to respond to the needs of the industry. So that is something that we'll be doing for the year, to do the organizational review together with the shareholder. so that we're able to say if these are emerging trends within the industry and the sector, how best placed can we then reconfigure the organizational structure to respond to those. So the issue of market research, the landscape, those are issues that will fall into the pot of an organizational review, substantive organizational review. We have set ourselves the target of 3 productions for further development. As you know, we stand on 2 core mandates. The one mandate is training. The other mandate, which is related to training, is how we can develop production products, you know, in terms of film, TV, animation products, so that the students that are graduates of NEMISA and other graduates within the sector can be given opportunities to link with established entities within the industry, so that you've got that uptake of a new entrance into the industry. So NEMISA serves almost as a nexus that connects established entities within the industry with upcoming entrants into the sector, and we give priority to our own graduates so that they are employed or they've got productive activities in terms of self-employment. The issue of developing healthy relationships with stakeholders, that is something that is part of our normal mandate we're doing, and the CEO has just alluded to that. I've talked about the review with the shareholder, with the portfolio committee. We will bring you documents as and when we develop, you know, a review and new propositions in terms of the new NEMISA value proposition, which we will share with you. We have set 6.3 million as a target for development of local content, so that we're also able to fill in the gap. If you look at the content that, you know, the public broadcaster as well as private broadcasters, you know, most of the broadcasters in TV and radio are battling with local content. So we end up with, you know, not being able to fulfill the mandate of local content as per applicable legislation. We've set that as a target to ensure that we also contribute to the mandate of developing local content. As part of the NDR, of which NEMISA is the repository of the database that the National Digital Repository that has been established by the DOC does, we have encouraged, you know, the promotion of new entrants into that sector, because our graduates will go out into all the corners of the country, capturing heritage, history, and I would urge members to get into that website and see the kinds of initiatives that we are involved in. We have also started, you know, relations within the region through the NDR. As part of the initiative under the NDR, we had a team that is working currently with the Solomon Mahlangu Freedom College Trust. Their focus is youth development. Our focus is content development, particularly looking at issues of South Africa's heritage. Now, the SOMAFCO Trust wants to expose South African youth to the history of South Africa, particularly looking at the role that the youth during the time of apartheid and the liberation struggle played in contributing to the freedom that we now enjoy. As part of their initiative, they have a prize-giving ceremony where they would expose South African youth to, you know, the facilities that the liberation movements had, particularly in Tanzania, in the former Solomon Mahlangu Freedom College. So we've begun to capture that as part of the heritage, which would fall under the mandate of the National Digital Repository. And one of the potential spin-offs that we've already started to discuss with the Tanzanian government is how South Africa and NEMISA particularly can contribute to ICT training using the facilities that have been handed over to the Tanzanian government there. So we're busy together with the DOC looking at potential, at the possibility of bringing in private sector investment in terms of that facility. Establishing provincial offerings to extend the NEMISA reach, the CEO has alluded to that as well, the different initiatives that we're doing to ensure that we are not bound by the geography of the physical facilities that we have, but through partnerships with, you know, the public broadcaster, other institutes like universities or higher education institutes, we are able to reach far beyond the physical facilities that we have. Here in Cape Town, for example, we've got a partnership with Bush Radio, where we are beginning to train participants in the community radio sector through the partnership with Bush Radio. So we're beginning to, you know, embed partnerships with provincial and as well as local entities nationally. The CEO has alluded to the employer endorsed training in terms of the SASIA training that he talked about. The critical issue for us is how to develop a new funding strategy. Now, it is not as simple as, you know, that statement would like to suggest. The core mandate, where we've got a public good mandate for NEMISA, is when we train our graduates in the programs that the CEO has already alluded to. The potential for NEMISA to have commercial viability lies in the other mandate, which is the production side of things, where we are able to have, you know, easier establishments of relationships with private sector entities, and you will find that those normally generate a little bit of income for NEMISA. Now, if we are to look at how NEMISA can begin to be a self-sustaining entity, obviously, you know, with the benefit of the review as well as intensive market analysis, one would be better informed. But our current experience begins to suggest that the production side of our mandate has got the potential, because it currently does produce those rewards, those financial rewards, in terms of, you know, small amounts of profits that we generate. Or should I call them savings, because the PFMA does not provide for us to make a profit. Now, if you look at the developing mandate that says try to be self-sufficient, it means that without the current subsidy that we get from government, if that were to be taken away, obviously the one easy target for us to cut would be training that is affording these children from rural areas, you know, an opportunity to get into this industry. And this is something that we'll have to develop much more comprehensive proposals around options for the DOC, for the portfolio committee to look into in terms of the implications of developing a new funding strategy. Like I said, we're doing an organizational review, and we'll come back to you to share that with you. Compliance In terms of certification, this has been a major weakness within the MISA, that the relationship that we have, particularly with the outgoing CETA, which is MEPSETA, we've had difficulties both on both sides, which led to students not getting certification, accredited certificates from MEPSETA. That challenge, we are, you know, dealing with that to the extent that in the handover report that MEPSETA will be doing to the new CETA, all our programs have got provisional accreditation status. Some obviously have been accredited for a period of time. Some, like graphic design, have got a new status of provisional accreditation for now. So that is an area which still needs our focus in terms of strengthening our own internal capacity to respond to the accreditation requirements of MEPSETA. But like I'm saying, we have covered sufficient ground for us to stabilize that situation. An integrated technology strategy and plan. Given the evolution of technology within the sector, I mean, if I give an example of the migration to digital technology, it is incumbent that you've got investments that are responsive to equipment that the industry is evolving to adopt. So we are busy with that to ensure that kids don't come in, for example, using analog technology, whereas the industry has already moved to digital technology. Our relationships with, you know, other entities, for example, ESA within the DOC, who have contributed to equipment, to NEMISA, you know, they are bearing fruit. But obviously, we need much more substantive relationships, particularly with private sector entities who would have mutually beneficial relations with us, where they can expose their technology to these learners that come through NEMISA's training, while also we benefit our learners through exposing them to the new technology. So those possibilities are there. The only drawback in terms of, you know, having medium to long-term relationships with private sector entities, particularly when you look at how we can entice them to invest their equipment, is that we don't have facilities where they can feel a certain level of comfort that tomorrow the landlord won't push us away, you know, things like that. Because if you've got such substantive investments in equipment, you have to have some degree of comfort that NEMISA will be there for the next 5 to 10 years at that venue. It is not easy nor economical to keep moving around that equipment. It's very expensive. So we would also look into the proposal where we are talking about a facility, a sort of a campus for NEMISA, within the framework that says to back down the relationships that we should establish, you know, to keep on par with the evolving technology. It would be necessary for us maybe to bring some stability in terms of infrastructure investment. The growth of short courses in terms of the target that we have to 500 trainees, given the mandate of job creation, that number can increase substantially if we've got commitments, you know, not only from the DOC, but also from industry. And our early indications is that if we are able to successfully develop, you know, training programs like what SASIA is requesting, as well as other bodies, the number of 500 really would be a drop in the ocean in terms of that target. In terms of our current programs, most of the short courses that we run would be around community radio training, like I said earlier, as well as training that we do for the Department of Higher Education, where we are training FET lecturers to enhance their skills in terms of, you know, things like animation, graphic design, as well as the other offerings in TV and radio. We have set ourselves a 2 million target, but like I'm saying, linked to the earlier point that I was raising, you know, that target can be exceeded very easily, given the relationships that we have established in provinces, where our capacity to deliver has grown exponentially. I've talked about the establishing of an EMISA campus and the rationale behind that, training and aimed at improving productivity, quality, and competitiveness. Our partnerships with the universities, you know, for entities like the SABC, for example, where we are beginning to say, can we have your annual skills plan so that we form partnerships where we do not have in-house capacity. We begin to build bridges with appropriately competent institutes so that we respond to the challenges that they have. This cannot be limited to the SABC. It is something that can be a starting point with the SABC, and we can offer those offerings to other private sector entities, your multi-choices of the world, the ETVs. So we are looking at that as, you know, another area of growth. How we increase the skills programs that we have so that we reach a level of even executive programs, you know, for executives at the SABC, public broadcaster, and as well as other entities. Training that allows learners to act in a wide-ranging working condition, that is currently part of the mandate that we have, and it would be part of the mandate that we are delivering in terms of the four programs that we talked about. The bursary allocations for 2011. Thank you, CEO. We've got a total of 101 bursaries. And the quantum of the money is just under 3 million. Most of our students, like I said earlier, these are students that come from rural families, households, and as part of our mandate, you know, the mandate that we've received from the DOC is that we need to look at learners who would not otherwise be able to access this training. So the learners that we have, really, we've got very little confidence that if we were to say to them, for example, pay 10% of the cost of your studies, we would lose over 90% of those learners. So you must understand that when we admit them, they come to NEMISA to be housed at our cost, to be tutored at our cost, to be transported at our cost, to be fed at our cost. There's very little social or economic support that they can rely on from their own family structures. So we have to take accountability not only for their training in terms of the skills, but also in terms of their readiness to enter the industry. So we have to look at the whole person. The manner in which they present themselves. Sometimes we even help these children with minor things which you would think these are minor, like toothpaste, you know, roll-on, assisting them to buy a shirt and a tie when they go for interviews so that we enhance their potential to land jobs in this industry. The manner in which the industry is structured, unfortunately, it does not provide for full-time employment as such. Most of even the big names within the industry, you know, producers and, you know, editors, they do sessional work. So when there is a project, SABC, other broadcasters will advertise that you bid for that and you work for that for the duration of that contract. It is only your ability to be able to deliver a quality product that ensures that you've got currency within the industry. So we have to make sure that these kids who graduate really can compete with the best, you know, from any other institute. That is why you will find that the bursary does not give you a full picture of the cost that we incur. Most of the budget that we have, we will be using it, for example, to add to that in terms of transport and other things that are related to ensuring that our products can compete. And we do have products that are established names in this industry. The achievements for 2010-11, our lecturers, we've got lecturers that have published books. The introduction of the national curriculum statements at FET level, we've got lecturers that have written textbooks in terms of that. And it is due to that, the credibility that we have, that we are also afforded an opportunity to train for the Department of Higher Education. We have obtained another grant from MEPSITA in terms of community media. Due to the partnership that we have with MEPSITA and the quality of the work that they see us do, we have an MOU where they are funding a learnership in terms of community broadcasting. They have also provided bursaries, I think, for about 10 students from the rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal as part of their, you know, I would assume, the confidence that they have in NEMISA in terms of the quality of work that they see us do. NEMISA is not the only client of MEPSITA. We've got private sector entities, you know, whom we compete with, but the MEPSITA has chosen us as the service provider of choice. We've got other MOAs that we've signed. I've talked about Bush Radio, Love Life, Legacy Media, as well as MEPSITA. I've talked about the renewed accreditation with MEPSITA, and I've talked about the training that we've done for community radio, television, and the FET sectors. Which would have excluded the full-time students that I've already alluded to. The external verification process, in terms of challenges that we had with the certification of the past cohorts from 2007, we've already met the minimum requirements in terms of certifying of those students. Implementing an RPL program, it's something that we are busy with MEPSITA to cover ground with respect to that. And RPL, in terms of, you know, the skills that people have within this industry, is really key for us to formalize the acquired skills in the workplace into a unit standard that is accredited by the CIT. So this is very important for us, but it is much more important that the systems within the CETA are jacked up so that we've got, you know, a smooth running process of conducting the RPL. The majority of our graduates, particularly in graphic design and animation, are employed. And if you were to understand that graphic design and animation in your national curriculum statement, from grade 1 to 12, you don't have that as a subject. You know, so there is really extraordinary effort that particularly lecturers within these two fields have to go to upskill these learners to a point where they can begin to, you know, have the skills to compete. So it's an achievement that we're very proud of. And I've spoken about the upgrading of equipment from analog to digital, and the donation that we receive from ESA, as well as our own investments in terms of us purchasing equipment. So we have maintained as well as grown our client base in terms of content production, the NDRs, the MOAs that we've talked about. Due to the quality of work that we do. Obviously, we can't, you know, overmarket how much a learner who has been trained for a year can do. Hence, the need for us to have relationships with established players in the industry so that the skills that our graduates have can be enhanced by people that have got experience in terms of the practical application of those skills in the industry. So those are the things that we are looking into to ensure that, you know, you don't throw these kids to the wolves and you give them the confidence that they can do without actually taking them through a process of almost internship where we build relationships in terms of the contract that we have with production houses that ensures that they acquire those skills through the content productions that we have currently. We've got exhibitions that go through to all parts of the country. I'm not sure that members can accuse us of not servicing their constituencies because we really go far and wide. There is no place where we don't go. And our focus is on those rural, deep rural areas, you know, where some of the maybe commercial enterprises or more established entities might not have an interest in going. But we do go out and try to recruit from the poorest of the poor. The CEO will speak to the challenges and then we'll finalize with the financial report.
Maybe before the CEO comes in, welcome, Deputy Minister. We are more welcome. We are fortunate to have you within the committee meeting. Friday, we had the minister also attending, so we are more welcome.
Thanks, Chair. The challenges that we have, of course, some are academic and financial and the industrial ones. Technology, as the CEO has mentioned, is changing every day. Now with the introduction of the DTT, the DVB-T2 that the country is going to roll out, and it's difficult to compete with the industry out there, but we're trying our level best because these equipments are very expensive. To run an animation program is very expensive, for example. Most of the materials that we use, we get them from overseas. It's China and America where we buy animation tools, starting from the desk itself that they use to draw from 2D to 3D, not mentioning the softwares themselves. I think that is why on our growth path we even thinking of sharing with ESA the skills of software design and engineering so that maybe in the coming future we'll bridge this gap of software designs. The accreditations, the challenge which is there now is for presenting ourselves to the new CETA. We had a very good relationship with the MEPCETA end of last year. Now the new CETA, we have to go and present ourselves and start the relationship, and which we're hoping that it will be fruitful as the same as the one we had with MEPCETA. The legal status of NEMISA is we have agreed with the shareholder on the revision, as we have mentioned. That is after 10 years now, and you see we're still on the same mandate of saying go and get these youth from the rural areas and provide them with the training. And it doesn't give us more of commercial wing because our schedule is 3A. Therefore, it also contradicts with the sustainability mandate that we have been given. The stakeholder relations that we embarked on, the campaign that we're doing, we're hoping that at the end of it, which is we have given ourselves the target of June, July, on the stakeholder relations, we'll be ending up as NEMISA being the supplier of choice for the government, most of the institutions within the government, on skills development and training. That is why we're embarking on covering the whole of South Africa on partnerships, starting from universities to your FTs and technicons. That will give us more credibility to can say to government, to GCIS, you know, to SABC and all other stakeholders to say we are the trainer of choice.
Thanks,
Mama. Okay, I'll continue the budgeted statement of financial performance. We've presented a 3-year projected financial statement of financial performance, and our sources of revenue, we've got two sources of revenue, which we've called here the non-tech revenue, which is actually revenue coming from projects that are undertaken by the Institute to try and, you know, as part of its funding strategy. We then have the transfers receivable, which is the money we receive in the form of a grant from the Department of Communication. Our projected revenue from non-tax revenue is 13.7 million for the current financial year that we're in, and then 2012-13 is 14.5 million, and in 2013-14 it's 15.3 million. And we estimate that the grants that we're going to receive from the DOC being 33.5 million for the current year, 34.1 in the following year, and 35.9 million. Our expenditure for those years is 48.5 million for the current year, 51.2 in the following year, and 52.3 in the following year. This gives you a deficit of 1.3 during the current year, 2.6 in the following year, and 1.1. The breakdown of the expenses, we've got the compensation for employees, which that includes administration staff and training staff, and then the goods and services, that's mainly your administration expenses and some of the project expenses that we incur, and then the depreciation is a non-cash item, but we account for it as an expense, as part of the expense, but it's actually a non-cash item. So even though we might have a deficit in terms of accounting income, but in terms of cash flow, we actually have, it means we'll be having surpluses because of the depreciation. And then we then have the budgeted statement of financial position, which is what used to be called commonly known as the balance sheet. Our assets during the current year were estimated to be 14.9 million, and then in the following period to be 62.5 million and 70 million. The major cause for the increase of the assets in the 2012-13 period is, as already alluded in the presentation, is that we intend establishing the campus. And so that 56 million, about 50 million rands worth of it, will be cost incurred towards the building or the establishment of the campus. And our equity and liability status, it's okay, it's also 14.9 million, which is basically your accumulated surpluses of 9.7 million and trade and other payables of 5.2 million, giving you 14.9. And then the following year, because we are expecting a deficit of 2.5 million, it means our accumulated surplus is going to come down to 6.2 million. And trade and other payables is 56 million. Now, the 56 million for trade and other payables is actually deferred income, which is income that we'll be receiving in respect of the building that we'll be constructing above. So we intend to be able to raise about 50 million rand also
and that those grants will be reflected as deferred income. And then, again, because of the deficit, the accumulated surplus will come down to 4.4 million, and then the deferred income as part of trade and other tables, 66 million in 2013-14. Finally, we'll look at the maturity and risk framework. You know, under this framework, we are required to report losses due to criminal conduct, irregular expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think in the past, the MISA has not, well, I think last year we incurred about 22,000 in irregular expenditure. But during the current year, we're not focusing on, in future years, we're not focusing any expenditure under these following items. Okay. I'd like to thank you all, and we're prepared to take questions. Maybe just in conclusion, I should just state, you know, that currently our alumni of students, some of them are based at the SABC, some are based at MNET. We've got some at community radio stations. Some are with commercial radio stations such as 702, and some are involved with Clockwork Zoo animation, in the animation and film industry. Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. I gave you 90 minutes. You choose to take 40. That's fine. We are doing very well. Members, Member Magazi, Mtambi Kekane.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me take this opportunity, Ms. Kelly, and actually break the NEMISA. It's been a long time that not seen. Chair, I want to take NEMISA to their strategic plan 2011-2014. That's what. Let's go to page 29. On your, I think you were doing what is it called? Let me see. Organizational overview, SWOT analysis. And one of your analysis, it says, I'll summarize. The industry, there is a perception by the industry that they don't actually see you adding value to your mandate. You know what is your core business of industry. And for me, the question is, if there is this perception by the industry players, what is your plan to deal with that perception? Because you will need to have a strategy, actually, or you will have to respond to that perception so that the NEMISA is also being seen as one of the SOE that is most it's needed by the industry. That is one. Again, in the same page 28, again, I don't know, bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are talking about the inability to attract as many students from animation and graphic design. My question then, do you have a clean plan or a strategy to attract those students? You are also talking about there is a lack of international collaboration and staff development. Yeah. And my question there, because for the fact I know there was a relationship between the Malaysian university, there was an exchange program. What happened to that relationship? Again, on opportunities, you are also mentioning that, let me see, design and deliver skills programs, courses related to programs, targeting, you're on targeting women and members of the disability community. How are you going to do this? Because you need a clear plan. How are you going to attract them? Because that's your target. Now you need a plan. Now, on a core business, the last bullet, but I will take the last sentence, where it says, supplying innovative solutions to challenges faced by the academic opportunity, the country, and the continent. Actually, my question will be based on the country and the continent, because I understand now, as Nemisa, you want to expand. How are you going to do your, how are you going to expand? Again, Chair. Maybe let me stop there, Chair, because I have five questions for them. Let me give others the opportunity. On your strategic plan, I see you have given us your presentation. Thanks.
Mtambi.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start from the end of the presentation on the materiality and the risk framework. This 22,000 irregular expenditure that was incurred with the mechanism to recover, or were there any remedial actions that were taken against those who were responsible for the irregular expenditure? Can they also explain with regard to on the financial statement of financial performance this expectation of a 2.5 million deficit? What are the major causes? And then there's been an indication that you are intending to raise a 50 million rent to that effect. How are you going to raise this? What is your anticipated source of funding of that 50 million amount? The other one on challenges. It has been reported that there are challenges of presenting yourself to the new sitter. Do you actually have timeline as to when? What are the actual challenges then? Because if the new sitter is there, why then can't you introduce yourself to this new sitter? The second one was with regard to your legal status. Yes, the mandate was that go and train youth at the disadvantaged communities vis-a-vis the sustainability part of it. Then the question that comes is this: do you think you have done enough now? You have reached every youth from the disadvantaged communities. On your achievements, again, it's about your graduates. You said 80% of your graduates in graphic design are employed. Then that, and then you have said that in terms of your alumni, there are students that are placed to you raise the number of institutions that have taken those students. Then my question again is on this tracing and placing of students. those that don't you have some who are lingering, apart from this, those ones that you've raised that they are with MNET? Are you sure all that all the students that you've created have got employment? They are not lingering. I'm saying that I'm raising. Do you have a database wherein you trace and place all the students of yours? The interesting one, like the COSC was reporting, is this about that you've reached all provinces. We are not so sure with that. We want to get actual statistics. You said that you've reached all the provinces, but I think this is the statement that we want to contest ourselves here. Can you tell us maybe how do you communicate with the provinces in this respect? And then I think you've got the statistics as to where have you visited, like you said in this report. You've got statistics as to where you visited, and you'll be able to tell us who were the participants. And then how often do you do that? We're not convinced with the statement, I think I want to say that. But it's upon yourself to prove it to us. You've made mention of signing MOUs with Love Life, Bush Radio, whoever, ne? But now one wants to understand what is the value contribution of these MOUs? What effects do they bring on your work as Nemisa? I think for now, let me pause to give others.
You are scaring me, both of you. You are pausing because you are giving others a chance. It means something still coming. Honorable Kekan. Thanks. Sorry, Chair. Chair, I want to just say that the presentation, we don't know once we start implementing, but the presentation gives us a sense of elation because these are issues that we think if all entities, if all of us at least have this intention to improve the situation of others in South Africa, South Africa will definitely be a better South Africa because the South Africans themselves are standing up and they are there finding means and ways to deal with their own problems. So I don't know. I'm feeling excited. I would imagine you, Chair, is also getting the same sense of elation out of this report. It's very impressive. We only hope they can implement it and make a success of it. Just some two issues. The first one, that one on you building, I know you've got limited resources. You know, in public works, both in the urban and in the former homelands, they've got so many properties. In fact, in the homeland, they'll tell you, the community is still saying, this house belongs to the government, this building belongs to the government. In the urban areas, if where I'm coming from, I can tell you there's a post office open because they've built a new post office in a shopping complex, and that's a big area. So I'm just saying maybe before you build new buildings, because all these buildings are going to waste, check with Public Works if they can allocate a suitable building, which might not just need some touch-up, some revamping here and there. Because that money can be saved for other things. The second thing, and Comrade Ogat is there, I'm sure he can facilitate this, and even in Alexander, I'm sure somewhere there should be a big building that is going to waste. But internationally and former homeland, urban area, all over the place, there are just so many buildings that are going to waste. And we need to build new buildings. So I'm saying, as a first choice, maybe check that. You might be lucky and get a good place. The second one, you know, when you want to recruit from the rural areas, like people have been asking, the first thing that comes to mind is rural areas are not easy to deal with because facilities are not there. Newspapers don't reach them.
if you're going to advertise to recruit with newspapers, you might find a very bright boy who's never seen a newspaper in his life. And how, what is your strategy to reach out? Are you going to do it through schools, through districts of education, and see who are the students available? How are you really going to reach? Because if the information is not spread out, you might easily be accused of just recruiting those that you know. And some people might say, we are here also waiting for opportunity. They never reach out because we don't know about them. So I just want to hear your strategy there. But finally, really, really would like to wish you all of the best, because we just think, yes, we fight in the fight that we should fight, and nobody is not going to fight it for us unless we stand up and do it ourselves. And South Africa, if we succeed, will be successful. Thanks, Chair.
Welcome back, Honorable Davin.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the welcome, though it was not that warm for greetings to all in the committee room. Chairperson, my question. Okay, my question is on page of the presentation on strategic focus area number 3, your 3.3. I just want to know whether you have a plan to address what you have identified in 3.3. You talk of improving the organizational efficiency, security, and effectiveness, and then you've listed whatever challenges that you are experiencing. Then I just want to know if there's a plan and what is the plan to address that. Secondly, on the issue of the students that you are training, I'm not sure if this thing has been highlighted or not, but I would like to understand what is the criteria and the selection process of those students, and then does it include those that are physically challenged? The third one is whether you do work with the youth councils and the National Youth Development Agency in this useful program that we're engaging on. Lastly, in your document, the original strategic plan, not the PowerPoint presentation, if one can make me understand or give clarity to the template, the meaning of those headlines, I see you have an MO, for example, and your output and indicator stroke deliverable. I'm not sure, but they usually go together, indicator, and at the same time it becomes a deliverable. If one can give me clarity on that, because my understanding is that the indicator is the specific, the key performance indicator, then your deliverables probably, if you can accommodate them in your output. But looking into actually what you have written, for example, on you have page number 23, if you have the document, your indicator is formalize and initiate implementation. I don't know, how do you formalize an indicator? Because to me, that is an activity. But one will have to clarify with me. Thank you.
Welcome back, Honorable Zeb.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. No, I'm partly covered in terms of my first question in regard to your recruitment strategy. I'll just add if you can tell us how is your relationship with provinces and municipalities in this regard. Or you just go there and zoom direct to those rural areas. And do you have any coordinator or whatever office at the level of the provinces or at the local level? And also your relationship, if there's any relationship between yourself and the education department, because I think it will be more important to have this kind of relationship. Second one is in regard to your presentation in terms of one of your key priorities for 2011-2012, to develop new funding strategy. What does it mean? Does it mean that you want us to shift from the current funding model? They want to introduce a new funding model was some of the reasons you've said. Now you can see NEMISA can be self-sustaining entity. What does it mean? If we can unpack it a little bit, what are your intentions in regard to this funding strategy? Because maybe you feel that the current funding model is no longer relevant, if this is what you are saying. And then number two is in regard to your organizational overview in the SWOT analysis. I think in that table, there's a column that is missing. Maybe that is why most of the questions arise from that part, if we can check from all the members. There's a missing link in the table, because once you say SWOT analysis, there must also opportunities and threats. They might be on the other part of your document. But, for example, if you say there's lack of transparency on budget allocations, approval and expenditure and other funding constraints, on the other page you say inability to attract as many students for animation, the other one outdated and obsolete training equipment and facilities. Who's responsible? Whose responsibility is this? It's like we are just throwing it on us, but you are not telling us from the NEMISA side what was supposed to happen that didn't happen. Or really, there's something that is missing around this table to explain other things. Because if you give it to me as a laywoman as I am, reading this document, in some of the points I'll say that somebody's not doing his or her job somewhere, somehow, in NEMISA. Because you cannot just say inability to attract as many. Whose responsibility is that? It's not our responsibility. It's the responsibility of NEMISA. I've given you the mandate. So that means somewhere, somehow, you are not even living up to your mandate. And the other thing, I think it will be the last one, is in your document, the submitted document that Honorable Devine was talking about, is in regard to your employment equity occupational level. I'm not sure the relationship between the documents on the table on page 37. It may be a typing error or a simple mistake, but if it's a legal document, that simple mistake can be serious one day. That in total of your staff components, is it 31 or 32? Because if you look at the side of your gender, you say it's 31. But on the side of the race, it says 32. And again, when you go back to the posts, the vacant posts. If you count them according to the table that you have submitted, it gives me 11. You are saying your vacant posts are 13. I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't count correctly. If you can also, when are you intending to fill up those posts? Or is there any problem, financial or otherwise? Why do you have so many vacant posts? Is it full-time or part-time? Last feature is in regard of outsourced services. How much do you spend, maybe on quarterly basis or on monthly basis, on the outsourced services? Issues like canteen services and cleaning security services is understandable. But maybe if you can elaborate more on the payroll and the internal audit, the outsourcing of the internal audit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I hope you have written all the questions and you have to respond. Over to you, Chair, and your team. You feel that they are less, I can still allow them to continue. I can see you don't.
Thank you, Chair. The first one on perception, that the industry does not see us That's the campaign we started end of last year. That is why we mentioned this renewal of subscriptions that have expired. On industry bodies, we subscribe since we are a public entity. Therefore, for example, on NAB, Association of Broadcasters, we are not allowed as NEMISA to be a member because we are not a broadcaster. But they've given us that allowance to come and listen and give input on the membership committees so that we can get what they're doing there and we can tell them what we're doing and to share those contributions. So the industry has started to work with us since the end of last year, December, through this renewal of all subscriptions that we had. Last week we were sitting on the Commercial Radio Membership Committee of NAB. We met with SACIA. SACIA is an industry of AV, audiovisual companies, the suppliers. They run courses from a European-based company called Infocom that deals with installation of audios, visual, and what. So these modules are very expensive. There are modules like your AV installed for 2 days and you pay almost 12,000 rand. So what we're talking to them is, look, we've got a mandate as part of the DOC on the rollout of digitization in the country. So as NEMISA, our contribution is to train these people from rural areas and other SMMEs who have started to put their efforts on installation of dishes and all. What program can we put? Then they said, no, we'll design the AV install program. That will be a South African program, not copying the European one. So that's the process we are. We're designing that with them. And since they are the industry, so they've called all service providers that are their members on putting up that, then we'll submit to our shareholder, then we'll submit it to CETA for accreditation. So that come when our ministry says, NEMISA, are you ready? We are ready for the strategy of rolling out the digitization, then we can show them the program that we have registered. And other industries, when you're going individually to production houses that are commercial, we have met with Sasani Studios, and, you know, surprisingly, when we arrived there, the CEO showed us about two studios, TV studios that are empty, that we can use for practicals for our students. And they are so willing to partner with us to bring the internship program. Now, the internship program, NEMISA should apply together with a production house from a CETA. Then CETA authorizes that program. Then we can take it to that particular production house. So these are the partnerships that we're trying. We met last week, Wednesday, with Dimension TV in Rodiport. They are well-known guys in OB events that even SABC uses them during elections. They are also used in covering the swimming, sports, and other athletics activities. So they are willing to partner with us on the broadcast engineering component because they are good. Some of the OB events that they have assembled them from within the country themselves. So they've got a skill that we can use to our communities in the engineering component. We have been talking with Centec on their technology programs that some they are taking and they are sponsoring to the University of Pretoria. So we're discussing on how can we put up a program as NEMISA that addresses some of the issues at Centec. Not mentioning the SABC, The SABC is cooperating very well. You know, by next week, we met them yesterday.
Oh, we are saying SABC is cooperating, not coping.
They are cooperating.
Oh, okay, no, it's fine.
They are cooperating very well, Chair. We were sitting with them even yesterday. So, in that, on their skills program, that how can we help them enhancing their skills program? So what we're looking for from the SABC is that since we are NEMISA and we're still this very small, and SABC is big, it's visible in all provinces. So if we get that partnership and we put up programs that are needed within the SABC, now we can use SABC facilities that are available in the provinces, some of what Honorable Kekan has mentioned. If the SABC in KwaZulu-Natal has got a studio for radio which is not working for a lot of hours, then those hours we can put up a radio program of 20 youth around the KwaZulu-Natal at SABC Center. So NEMISA is visible in KwaZulu-Natal. If SABC has got a studio for TV in Northwest, for example, you remember Northwest, they've got big things there. And Mafikeng, you know, they've got about 3 studios of TV that are not working. So we can put up 50 students of TV, and the university is just across the road. And they want our help also on the practical component for their honors degree in broadcasting section. So we can have students across the road there, crossing from the university to the SABC studios there, where it will be NEMISA's training. So this partnership, we're hoping it will work, it will do wonders, because SABC is there everywhere. So by next year, we might be having NEMISA visible in all provinces. And that will enhance our numbers. If we've got 20 in KwaZulu-Natal, 10 in the Northwest, 10 in Mpumalanga, we'll end up with 400 or 500 numbers that are full-time, not talking about short courses that we run. Now, that was the missing link with the industry. That and the industry is also cooperating very well. They're accepting us with all hands, you know, open when we go there and when we come. What Sasia is mentioning, the other thing is that come in June, MediaTek exhibitions in the Dome in Rembeck, they're going to announce this program and the partnership publicly to even the international stakeholders that they have. Now, that Malaysian exchange program, fortunately, last year in October, when we tried to retrace the relationship, we found that the dean on the other side who was responsible for the MOU is still the same person. So we are talking with them. They are waiting for us to give them a date. When are we coming? They are setting up presentations from other faculties that were not part of the MOU before. They are waiting for us to give them a date, and we had waited so that we can get some free dates from our shareholder DOC members so that we can go with them. They want us to sign that MOU again. Now, that MOU was a very good MOU, because we could take our students after graduating to Malaysia to do the master's program. Some of the students who benefited from that relationship were part of the Sumbandila satellite that was launched together with Stellenbosch. So we had students from video section and the software design who were part of that group who were sent to Malaysia. So it was very beneficial. So we're looking into that also. And with the partnership that we do with the National Film and Video Foundation, they also sharing some of the partners that they have with us. Like they have a partnership with Murdoch University in Australia. So they are linking us with them. They've got a partnership with the Southern California University in the States. They are linking us with them. So we're extending this hand to say, even to the industry, we're here, we need your mentorship and we need your help. How can we help each other? So they are willing, they are participating very well. The to address the coverage of people with disabilities, it is very difficult on our side as trainers because of the technology. We sat last year and we discussed around it. Last year we had a person with a student with a wheelchair. This year we've got a student with hearing disability. You know, it was very interesting and challenging because we had to research very quickly to get the technology to train, because I remember we were asking the team of animation, these students on animation, how are you going to train this on animation? How are you going to explain it? So the team said, this student is very good. We want this child here because it's very good on animation. Then we had to call service providers and sit them down and say, we're looking for this technology. How can we get it? Where? And we ended up getting facilities to address that. That youth is with us, and the lecturers are very impressed because they said it's very good. That also addresses the question of selection criteria. We ran a very big campaign with SABC last year on SABC radios, all of them, and the television. That was the campaign that was talking about partnership with SABC on a bursary. We received up to 6,000 applicants from all over the country, and we can only get 100. So that campaign has helped. After that, they send applications. Then we interview them. Because these programs, the interview comes in here because of the specialties of the programs. It becomes a little bit easier on the television and radio because there the criteria, the interviews are not that difficult as compared to your animation and graphics, because it has to do with the other component of a gift, is art. So they will ask them to create an immediate portfolios as part of the interviews for the selections. So that becomes part of the selections. But hence we felt that campaign was not enough. That is why we are still on the other campaign of stakeholder building the partnerships. What this partnership relations is doing is we're also extending it to the municipalities. I remember we were invited by the municipality of Etekwini municipality. They've just built, they are completing the multimedia center. And they said to us, we don't know who's coming to train here. So can you come in and use our facilities to train? That's the relationship we're going to do there. The ECDC in the Eastern Cape also, when they were doing their summit on the launch of their provincial TV, they said we've got buildings. As Honorable Gagan has mentioned, we've got buildings here that are empty. Can you come and use them? We want you to come and train our people here. And we were there the last 2 weeks training their television SMMEs, 20 of them. Now, these are the partnerships that we think it will enhance the campaign that we also running on exhibitions and television. This week, our marketing team, the one team will be in Durban. There's an exhibition in Durban. The other team is going to Skukuni. There's an exhibition from the Department of Education. They have invited us to come at Skukuni for high schools. Now, as part of that, we said to our shareholder on the project of NDR, the new revised NDR, which is starting this month, we're going to involve high schools. In each and every province, we're going to select high schools. Now, we want to involve, because this curriculum is not there on the high school level, so we want to make an awareness of multimedia to this youth one. So involving them in a one high school, we're going to select 5 youth. Because our mandate says females, more females. So we'll have 3 females, 2 males, and 1 teacher to supervise them in each high school. That's the new project on the NDR part that our shareholder is funding, DOC. So these youth will take them to one place from this province A. Then we'll get trainers to come and train them on how to research for a script, for a story. We want them to do the mini documentaries as part of our contribution to local content development. Now, after that, we'll teach them, train them the camera, then how to edit. The following week, they will be released to their villages, to their schools, to get stories, write, shoot, and edit. The maximum is 10 minutes. Now, these documentaries are going to compete provincially. Then end of the year, they are going to compete nationally. That will say to our public broadcaster with the partnership that we're doing to SABC, choose, here is the local content. Which one do you think from this national 9 documentaries that we have selected do you think can be developed more into 24 episode or 30 episode that is marketable? Now, the gist here is this team in each province will have the production team. The formation of the production team is the SMMEs. Our own alumni students that we have trained in provinces, will put two of them, the cooperative, one to form cooperative. There will be a supervisory team to this high school team. Now, the winning documentary, it means this SM cooperative has won from the province. So if SABC is giving them a business for this documentary to be a 30 episode, those youth from that province, they've won, they've started to be a business-like. So we want to form this kind of incubation-like through this competition here, NDR. So these are part of the campaign that we see ourselves extending NEMISA and reaching out to them. So the following year, we'll be doing the same process with different high schools. So we're estimating within 2 years, 3 years, will be the curriculum or multimedia activities will be known in the high schools and in villages out there. That's part of our outreach that we're talking about. It also covers the expansion question that was asked on the core business. So we feel that way we'll be expanding ourselves. The other thing that the commercial radios, community radios mentioned last week at NAB meeting, they said the campus broadcasters, campus radios. In a campus radio, they've got 9 presenters or 10 personnel who are not broadcast students. They are coming from Faculty of Law, Science, whatever, according to the gift. They did audition and get them. Now, as NEMISA, where do you think you can come in on training these people who are going to be graduates? So we're discussing that issue and saying, okay, can we run this RPL one-year program with them? Because they are doing the in-service training while they are broadcasting in the whatever campus radio. Then at the end of the year, these youth who are graduating in science degree can also get a certificate from MEPSITA for community radio broadcasting. So that kind. So we're going to sit with that industry and develop a module around that we can submit to CETA, MIC CETA, the new one. That also addresses the challenge that was mentioned on MIC CETA. We mentioned it as a challenge because we are still right on the beginning of it. We're going to face it. But we met last week for the first time with the CEO of the old ISET CETA, and we're putting up meetings because the other thing why we're putting it separately from the whole institutions is that we had a project that it was approved by the board of MEPSITA. We had about 7 learnerships that the board has approved from MEPSITA. In the agreement we signed with MEPSITA, we were supposed to be given this year. So we want the new CETA to continue that project. it was authorized as a special project. We're running it, we're going to run it with MDDA and MEPSIDA and ourselves. So that's why the meeting. So we're going to face that challenge, and we have started doing that. Do you think you have reached all youth out there? No, we don't think you have reached. We have done very little. That is why we're embarking on this campaign of partnerships, to say we need some vehicles out there in the provinces to help us. So we're partnering with, the other thing we're doing with MDDA is to get an inventory of all SMMEs that are also willing to train in communities broadcasting, so that we can mentor them and grow them, take them to a particular sita, and let them have the programs within their communities training and as authorized by the sita. So my MDDA said, no, we'll help you with a list, compiling that list, because some of them are applying for funding from them. Then we'll call them, sit down with them, and say, we are an EMISA and we work with this particular sita. Do you have problems to register your programs? Then we'll mentor them for a year, take their programs through to sita. Then the following year we release them. They're doing their business alone. So we're putting that. We're not out there yet. The challenge we're still running is on the partnership with local governments, the municipalities. So we're hoping that when we start this NDR new project of high schools, because we're going to ask for permission from the district municipalities to go to schools, from the province to the district municipalities. So we're hoping that that's where we're going to start the relationship with the local government. The student database here we have, as we mentioned, we feel that we are not yet there on addressing the youth challenges. So our database is still very small, so we have that. The reach, we've addressed that, also not yet there. That is why we're still on the campaigns of strengthening our partnerships. The MOUs, the value of the MOUs. When we put up an MOU, we attach a project to it. For example, the MOU we did with MDDA and MEPSIDA, we attached a project of learnerships. So that is why we had 7 learnerships attached to that. So when MEPSIDA submitted to their board, so they submitted that project as a special project. The MOU we're doing with the SABC, we're attaching the project of skills, workplace, their skills program. So we try, the MOU we put in with the National Film and Video Foundation, we're attaching a program. The program that we're attaching there is their CDBA program of script writing, because they've been good on that. So we want them to mentor us on the script writing for our students for radio and TV. We're also attaching a project of bursaries, because they said they are willing to fund some of our students on animation. They are interested on animation. They want to grow animation to the film industry. So they will be funding our animation students. So we try to attach an MOU with a project. Recruitments, we mentioned that. Selection project, the youth council. We're trying to partner also with youth structures. Like we mentioned, the SOMAFCO Trust is one of the youth structures. There are some youth leagues structures around Gauteng that are coming with projects of training. We're not yet there at the youth council. To tell you that we're not yet there. The youth, there are some youth structures in Durban that came to us. I don't know the minister. Kungumate, youth development. Yeah, they came to us for help and for community radio training, and we're also helping them on some of the community projects. That is where we got the bursary from MEPSID to the 10 of the youth from there. So we're trying this. There's a youth formation in Mpumalanga that has invited us. We were supposed to be there on the 18th of last month. They postponed. They are putting up an ICT initiative on digitization. So they want a partnership with us. So, yeah, we haven't stretched that much longhand to the youth formations, but we're busy with that. We're coming there. The relationship with local government, education department, both basic and higher education. The higher education, they have identified us as a trainer of FET colleges on the multimedia curriculum that they've developed. So we're training them. The basic education, this is the school projects, the NDR, that we're taking to them. So we're going to work with them. So we engaged with them on that. I think I've covered a lot, and some are financial. The chairperson will go through that. The COO will go through the organizational SWOT analysis. Thanks, Chair.
The question that was also related to the issue of REACH was, what is our relationship with the Department of Education? Most of the roadshows that we run also respond to the career days that are hosted by the districts in different provinces. So we've got very strong relationships with district offices. When they've got career days, we're invited. NEMISA is also part of the exhibitors who would go and talk to kids about our programs. The issue that you raised around the output and deliverables in our SWOT analysis, I think I should accede that maybe due to the newness of the monitoring and evaluation paradigm, you know, it might have been difficult for us to distinguish between an output and an indicator. So we'll take that statement as something for us to note to improve on how we've structured that. What are we doing in terms of the organizational strengthening of organizational effectiveness? The board has already approved a change management strategy that deals with that addresses some of the shortcomings that we've already identified. The change management strategy is looking at, maybe let me say even before I go into the detail of that, the challenges that you see in NEMISA, I think we've got an opportunity, which can also be a risk, that you've got new executives. The CEO was appointed on the 1st of August. I was appointed on the 1st of September. The CFO has got a little bit of, you know, organizational history because she's been promoted internally. But it also gives you an opportunity to say, look at the performance of the organization from a fresh perspective, which the board had already done, to go through a SWOT analysis that came up with the new strategy for 2011-2014. Because if you own some of the challenges, it is very difficult to, you know, want to expose yourself to say, no, I accept that there are these kinds of deficiencies. So we are hoping that the engagement that we are making with staff to participate in this change management, there is sufficient carrots for them to be able to buy into the process. For example, the issue of training, capacity building for staff, which has not been, you know, something that NEMISA has done comprehensively. It is something that when you engage with staff, they, you know, you can clearly see a definite need in terms of that. The standardization of the contracts, you know, there's a lot of issues which were not up to standard, which even for staff, they would look at it and say, look, in this environment, as a professional, I'll be able to develop and retain currency in the industry if I can have an employer that can meet these certain minimum requirements in the workplace. Previously, in terms of issues around security, there was quite substantive equipment that NEMISA lost in previous years. And there was a recommendation, I think, from even the portfolio committee in terms of security measures that needed to be enhanced, and we've started with that in order to protect the state assets. The issue of the vacant posts, the strategy document was developed in July. So a lot has happened since then. Like I'm saying, you know, the executive posts, for example, CEO, COO, CFO, they were still vacant. All those posts have been filled. Currently, the only vacancies that we have would be a finance manager as well as a procurement manager. Yeah, all the other vacant posts have been filled so far. Mindful of the fact that we are going into an organizational review, those posts which are not critical, where we can operate without filling the post, we would prefer not to fill the post until our organizational review informs us of, you know, the new needs as well as the requisite structure that will support the delivery of the new needs. But currently, I could say that in terms of the staff establishment, we are stabilized. The issues around outsourced services, I'm going to defer to the chairperson. The issue around a new funding model and what our intentions are. I think the issue was looking at the potential for generating income. Part of the problem is that in terms of the status of our schedule, when we generate income through these projects that the CEO has just talked about, you know, having MOUs with entities that are cash generating for us, over and above the allocation that we get from Treasury. For example, if we sign an MOU in March with MEPSITA and they allocate, say, a figure of 6 million, it will reflect in our annual financial statements as unspent funds. And in terms of the status of our schedule, we have to explain to Treasury why they should not take that money. So it sort of constrains the capability of NEMISA to generate funds so that we are able to sustain our activities without relying 100% on the allocation from Treasury. And that is why we are saying to the shareholder, can we relook the issue of the funding model, including the schedule of NEMISA, so that we look at possibilities. We have not yet agreed on which option we're going to take. Like I'm saying, our discussions with the shareholder, we have agreed that we need to do a substantive organizational review, so that we review what would have been appropriate 10 years ago might not be sufficiently appropriate as a delivery model, you know, 10 years down the line. So you need to be open to the possibilities of how you can look at other forms of revenue streams, how your structure can be better suited to responding to the needs of the industry. There's also the question of the irregular expenditure, Chairperson, which I'm going to defer to you. in terms of the cost recovery around that, as well as the issue of the 2.5 million deficit. I think those are the outstanding questions.
The irregular expenditure was actually incurred during the 2009-2010 year. I think my reason for mentioning the 22,000 was only just to indicate that we have had a problem of that nature, but quite obviously during the we're still going to have the audit for the current year. But management is also required to identify these transactions which are possible irregularities. And up to this stage, well, nothing has been identified. When the 22,000 irregularities did take place, I think it only took place because nobody really authorized it. But it had been, it was the board which had actually requested the services of an HR practitioner to do a recruitment purposes for the CEO at that particular point in time. So I think because it was a service that we did require, no particular action was taken. And as I said, it's just that the board had not followed the proper procedures in acquiring that service. In terms of the accumulated deficit, I think I did mention that depreciation is a non-cash item. It being a non-cash item, it means it's an item that you can add back, and in actual fact, what you'd be showing is a surplus of 996 in 2011-12. A surplus of 1820 in 2012-13, and a surplus of 3,414 in the 2013-14 year. But as I say, the accountants are required to provide for depreciation, which is to provide for future capital expenditure, and that is why it's provided there. But in actual fact, it's a non-cash item. But we have to provide for it in the income statement. I think, maybe the COO has discussed the issues of the funding. But, there's always a problem. NEMISA is a Section 21 company, which means it's a not-for-profit organization. But it's also a government entity. And whose status actually being primarily being focused on providing training, which is you could then say it's an educational institution, it can actually, it becomes difficult. Can NEMISA actually generate a profit, or whether I can say a surplus from its activities? These activities are actually supposed to be addressing the needs of the South African populations in terms of IT skills. Now, to what extent can we then start generating a surplus from the activities of NEMISA? I think it's a question as part of our institutional review we need to address. And just going on further about the buildings, I think we've held discussions with the National Treasury on this particular issue. In terms of the rental that we are paying on a monthly basis, they are supportive of the idea of establishing a campus. Now, the establishment of the campus project is at its initial phase. The need for it, I think, has been well recognized that we do, because even the facility we have is not suitable for an education institution. So I think we welcome the suggestions which have been made by the Honorable Member about looking into possible existing facilities instead of maybe going to establish or create new buildings elsewhere. As part of the detailed study towards this campus, we shall investigate this. But yeah, I think so. Maybe I should just limit it to that. That we shall investigate that as part of the exercise. I think those are the only outstanding issues from our side. Just one more thing. I think the outsourced services, which are mainly around the internal audit, and currently we've entered into a 3-year contract for internal audit services at about 300,000 over the 3-year period. Then we are also audited by the Auditor General, and the current fee for that is about 350,000.
Through you, Chair. Good morning, members and the Chair. I just wanted to explain the issue around outsource. We all know that before you outsource, you do a cost-benefit analysis. And I can tell you now that, to hire a middle manager for internal audit, it will set you back 650,000 a year. And here we are, we've got a team of internal auditors for 300. That should actually tell you that, without doing too much mathematics, that you realize that, you are getting the benefit of, through that service. The same thing if you look at your compensation specialist from a remuneration point of view, in the industry, costs you about 700,000. I know this because I run my own business and I know how much it costs to hire those people. And that's, we only talk in salary here, we're not even talking recruitment costs. So those are like services that, if you look at it, if you look at payroll, for instance, you don't need a full-time payroll person. You need a person that at the end of each and every month will be able to make sure that people get paid. And for you to pay about 700 grand for being such a small entity like NEMISA, it becomes something that doesn't make sense at all. So that's the reason why we, in particular, because these two have been mentioned, that we decided to go that route.
Are you done with the responses? Tea is ready for 11 o'clock. It's 11:05. Maybe let me take the follow-up questions, then we'll break for tea. Honorable Kekane Makazi Mthambi Ndabe.
Yeah, Chair, a short one. The National Youth Agency, which is located in the President's office, because you can realize these issues of poverty and our youth are big, and Minister Chabani is in charge there. I know they've got programs very interesting, and it's so interesting. That's another impressive area where you get youth so vigorous about changing the youth life in this country. I can tell you that the treasurer of the organization, NYA, and I must mention, Chair, that when you present, there are so many acronyms, MOU, CISA, SARAPA, so many. At the end, if they are not said what they are, you get confused. For people like myself, I think I counted about 11 or 13 acronyms. So I know it's time consuming, you want to take shortcuts, but if you can please now and then remind us what they stand for. This one is NYA, National Youth Agency, and it deals about self-employment, education, artism. They even have people from overseas who have partnered with them to improve the situation. So exciting things indeed are happening. I'll just request that, if possible, through Minister Chabani, you, in fact, their treasurer, I was amazed that he's a chartered accountant at the age of 26. And you can see, President, our youth, if they really can acquire these skills in big numbers, poverty will automatically go away. So I'm just saying, if you could contact them, because one of their challenges is, are they reaching out to rural areas? And they've acknowledged they are more concentrated at the urban, and they'll definitely want to move into rural areas. That is National Youth Agency through Minister Chabani.
Chair, although I have many questions for NEMISA, but now that they've reminded us that actually they have new CEO and new CFO, I think I'll reserve my questions and park it when you come for the annual report. So I'll write down those questions, but when you come, by then, you'll be old. But the chair, it is Nandeke. You see, Chairperson, I understand that there was an emergency to get the CEO. I fully agree. But when it comes to the procedures or processes of acquiring then the board, they should do so and give whoever is responsible, whether it's an HR chair or chief director or director, to implement procedures of procurement. I don't expect that because there is the emergency, then the organization will flout the laws, the actual PFMA management. And I think this point, if you read the King 3 report on corporate governance, it's being alluded. It's being elaborated. So I just want to ask NEMISA, no matter how the issue is urgent, but please, let's stick to the procedures. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My follow-up was on the same issue that Comrade Nseke has just raised now. To say you cannot say now because it was the board, the matter is closed. The PFMA is very clear what needs to be done with regard to any regular expenditure. I'm raising it because it will still come in your audit. So for it to have a finality, I think if indeed that was a good cause, you need to apply for condemnation. The PFMA is right. It's very clear on this point. So we cannot say that it's still going to recur because now it will be audited. Isn't that you need to put it again in your opening records? You report for the past previous financial year, so it will still be in. So that's what I was saying to say. Maybe you should start to embark on processes wherein you request National Treasury maybe to condone it, if that's the case.
Seven.
Chairperson, in addition to what Honorable Mutambi has said, I just want to highlight a few things that for any monitoring body or person
requires monitoring evaluation to be able to do his or her work. He needs to have clear targets and objectives and everything in place. Then, as parliamentarians, we are expected to do oversight over what you are doing. We are responsible for budget approval based on the document that you submit to us. If then the document is containing vague information, it makes things very difficult to say, really, as we adopt the document, if we want to adopt the document or we are comfortable with it, then we are able to motivate for the budget. I'm going back to the template. That is where our oversight work is based, not on your PowerPoint presentation, but on your indicators, the activities that you are going to do, and then your objectives. That's where our work is focused at. And then if that is not clear, it makes our work very difficult to do. As you indicated that probably it's because of whatever, I'm not sure about the new form or whatever, because an indicator has always been an indicator. I used to say when I was still on the other side of the table, I used to say it is better with my colleagues when we develop these templates, even if Treasury has come up with a complicated one, to just use the simple terms, what needs to be done, where, what, and all that, so that people understand the output part. What is it? What is the output when you're talking to the output? They are able to put the relevant thing. You don't put an action in a place of an indicator, because it's like that is what tells you that you have done this thing. It indicates exactly your action or the outcome of your action. Then if that is not clear, honestly, it gives me a problem, Che. I'm not sure what's the feeling of the committee, but this is the critical document and the content of what, how we must do our work. Thank you.
No, Chair, I'm fully covered by Honorable Ndabeni. I don't want to repeat.
Let's break for tea. When we come back, we'll take the response from Nemisa. Just for 10 minutes. So that some of us would need to go to demarcated places, you can be able to do that. I will meet 25 past 11.
Thank you. 17.
Oh, yes.
En jy? Ek skryf nou op die samen, ek skryf nou op in myne, en ek dan die boekhoudkundige, maar ek is kap van, want ek is nie die geregistreerde man, en ek sak die mense van. Dan gaan ek so, jy wil nog nie van, ek wil nie die moeilijke 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 van, ek
Thank you.
MTTA response. Over to you, Chairperson Nemisa, responses. CEO, response to members' questions.
I'm going away to ask you the city of Ibiza.
Thanks, Chairperson. NYA, we no. NYA, we have taken that note. It was not on the advanced level, the relationship that we have with the NYA, sorry. Oh, it is going to D. Oh, NYDA. Thanks. NYDA. We did some projects with them. It was on the project level, but it was not an agreement or understanding. If they have a project that needs to a production, they come to us, and we attend that. Through the shareholder, last year we produce some of the activities of them. They invited us on the Anton Lembet celebrations in KwaZulu-Natal to cover the celebrations as a production. So, Honorable Kegana, we need to take it to advanced level so that we can be part of some of the bigger projects that they're doing. We consider that. The figures on the HR table, we have the correct figures here, that 42. On the first table, occupational category and gender is 42 total, and occupational category and race is 42 total. I would like to apologize to the chairperson on these figures, because since we submitted last year, a lot has happened on the HR activities. That is why the different figures. So the updated figures are this one, are the 42 ones. It's 42. Then we'll update that page. Some of the indicators on the SWOT analysis. When it was reported on those paragraphs, there was an oversight of the complaints that were there as weaknesses from the structural organizational structure itself. Because remembering that the budget at that time was centralized. So we wrote it as a weakness there on the SWOT analysis. There's paragraph number 2 on the weaknesses of the SWOT analysis. page. So it was a weakness to say on the new systems that we want to put for financial procedures will decentralize the budget so that senior managers and managers can be part of their activities within their particular budget. So that is why that paragraph is kind of confusing when joining it with other paragraphs. So it's like it's something which is not, which is incomplete there with other paragraphs. That's the confusion on the SWOT analysis. So it was, I think, on the an oversight on our side. We were supposed to rephrase the paragraph, is the phrasing of it. We wrote it as is to say the budget was in one place and all of that. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, I think the Honorable Member was talking about indicators as captured in page 23. And I think the particular issue that she raised was the appropriate terminology to capture an output. Yes. Now, I think in terms of the particular key measurable objective, you will see that the key performance indicator is not even reflected or captured as such. We've captured it as an objective, 5.1, to develop and implement an extensive student reach strategy. Is that what you're talking about? Okay. Yes. My proposal is that we amend that so that we have a properly structured deliverable and indicator, so that we will give you a revised document with that clearly spelled out. Because it is correct, the indicator that is indicated there, those are process issues. It's not outputs, so you can't use that as an indicator. It is not something that should have been formatted in the manner that it has, and we can revise that and send it back to you, so that when you do your oversight work, you actually hold us accountable to something that is quantifiable.
Just the matter of the irregular expenditure, what I think we'll do is I think this matter had been reported in the 2010 annual report, but it's obviously a matter which could still come up, and what we'll try and endeavor to do is to come to give you a full report as to what action we've taken as the board on this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know what action will you take as a board if yourself as a board you are implicated. Maybe the shareholder can take something, but yourself, you might have some difficulty. But no, let's wait for that report which we are talking about. But my understanding was that there has been action already on the matter. By the shareholder, anyway, who in a way responded to some of those things and so on, by reconstituting the board and the other things and so on. So as a flowing from that. So I'm not sure at the level of the board whether you can be able to manage it. But yes, there are some administrative work which must happen to clarify the issue of treasure and so on, so that those issues are cleared and so on. But they will wait for that report if you are saying you are still going to provide it and so on. The issue which you have raised, we are proposing to redo your output and the other things and send it back so that they are clear, who are able to follow that and so on. But my assumption is that the areas members which they didn't comment at, they are comfortable with, except on the areas which they have raised certain issues.
But there are some follow-up questions from Zebe Magazi. Kekana? Davin?
No, Chairperson, I didn't raise my hand. Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mpunisha. Chair, now that in your comment that you think that members where they've not made comments, that means we are satisfied. But I want to reiterate, Chair, by saying if you look at the key strategic objectives of NEMISA, I request that as a committee we agree with this strategic objective. We sort of confirm to them so that when they go back, they actually begin to do their implementation plans. And I think this strategy, because that's another thing I didn't ask when we're starting this asking questions, to ascertain whether your strategy is it aligned with the DOC. But I assume it is aligned because I've seen, you know, the 2011-2010 and also 2010-2011, there is something about, you know, strengthening the NEMISA. But then again, Chair, I want us to agree on that so that when they go out of this, there are corrections that they're going to do, amendments, but they go with that in mind that we agree with their strategic objective, then they can begin with the planning. Another issue, Chair, what the NEMISA they've raised is that they also want to do the reviewal of the organization. And on that, I want also to ask the NEMISA if have they already met with the shareholder and actually share the idea, even if you don't answer now, what is the feeling of the shareholder? Does the shareholder agree on that? And then you will elaborate next time, you know, the planning, how are you going to go about it? Because I think from my side, we want to really see NEMISA taking, occupying your space in the sector, because we see it, you are a powerful organization, but there are few, you know, screws that we need to tighten up so that you can work freely. And if I compare NEMISA, we had a visit, I think last year, we went to Brazil, where we went to do site visits. You know, Brazilians in the universities, they have different hubs of technology, and they had different training, you know, in the broadcasting sector, electronic media, print media. And it was very encouraging, you know. That's my wish, to see that we are really up and running. Thanks, Chairperson.
Chair, just the correction that people made, the National Youth Development, it is Development Agency. It was my fault to say NYA. I really always default on these acronyms. Chair, the main point I wanted to make when our WIP comrade Stella says we do oversight on the document, that is true. But I'll also find it difficult to have a document and a high point presentation not being the same. Because when they do a high point presentation, they're taking us through the document. And the high point might be in a more concise way. I mean, even if they were working, reading the document, they'll say, well, paragraph 3 and 4, 5, let's jump because it is just detailed. But you can't give a document in a high point presentation that doesn't talk to one another, because you're supposed to take us through the document by another media high point presentation, which is just a verbal presentation, but you should be talking in essence the content of the document. So oversight is even while they are presenting. So if they are going to do a correction here, let them just make sure that the high point illustrations are not different, because this is one and the same thing. And we'll be misled if one says this and another one contradicts what the document says. So I'm saying the correction must be on both.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to thank the previous speaker for saying that they will go back and rework the template. I wasn't just referring to that page. I'm sure if you are going through the whole template that you're talking to about, you will do the whole document so that we are all clear. Thank you. Only when we adopt the document. Thank you. After we receive the reworked one. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Honorable Ndabeni must not speak before me, because always will see what I wanted to say. I wanted to say we must only adopt this document after the correction. I'll give you an example on the organizational review, the SWOT analysis. As I raised my questions around that, if you have listened to the presentation of the PowerPoint and what is written here, many questions might arise here. And I'm telling you some of the things, like the one that I've mentioned in terms of lack of transparency on budget allocations. That means something is happening somewhere, somehow, somebody's doing something wrong in NIMSA. That is my interpretation. But your presentation, if I've listened to it correctly, it addresses some of the issues. The only problem is, as Comrade Kekana is saying, the two documents are not speaking to each other. There are many wrongs according to this first document that must be corrected. And in addition of the correction, as much as Olanda very referred to the whole document, you must also go back to your employment equity occupational level. The gentleman there has said to us many things have transpired after the writings of this document. So you must go back and update the new information so that the information that we have is information that we also have as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I was going to propose that maybe we give them a time scale, because the other thing, remember, the other thing is that if you don't adopt, then it delays work, it does all kinds of things. It is correct that they should work on something proper. We pointed out the mistakes. I would request that maybe we should adopt, subject to correction being made, which will be brought us to us. I'm just hasty. I mean, we're closing this week. After that, Jesus is dying for us. It's Good Friday. And it might take, I don't know how long, before they come back to us. So if we can adopt, after adopting with the understanding subject to them bringing up corrections, so that they can start their work, or whatever work needs to be done can continue. Jesus Christ, part of his death will also be to deal with the shortcomings of the document. As you are talking about the death of Jesus Christ and so on. But I'm not sure that the minister they have to respond. I think we have just to conclude the meeting. Because surely there are also policy issues which are coming up. The issue of the establishment of NIMSA.
in its current form. I know CENTEC for the past some, don't know how many years, has been trying to move to Schedule 2 and so on. It never happened. I'm sure they're at peace now. They've accepted. They are no longer raising it, which is a good indication that they are at peace now, and so on. So, but there are issues which have come up, but with the undertaking that you want to go back and rework the document, what we'll do, we'll just pack the presentation so that you'll come and then present the rework which you want to do. But I must say, our time to get the program, we don't have time. Because when we come back, our budget debate is 31st May. We are coming back around 22 or 24. Now, you can see that there will be very, very under severe pressure. And I'm sure 24 was the date to adopt the final report for both DOC and GCIS. Now it put more pressure to us in terms of how do we manage that. But I'm sure it is in the best interest of NEMISA and ourselves that we allow you the space to go and do what you request to go and do. I will engage the members about trying to have a meeting which is not going to impact on the adoption of the reports and so on, so that we take through your revised document and the other things and so on. I'm sure members that will work, but Mr. Honorable Kekan is correct that it was going to be good when he dies. He dies once and for all. You see, he will die, then we'll engage you again, and he won't die at that particular point. So, but I think members, we can accommodate them on the rework and the other things and see how do we put them in as soon as we come back. But it will be a tight one. I must indicate now so that you don't fight me when it's tight and so on. But otherwise, before maybe we leave, I see the Deputy Minister want to say a word or two.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Just to one word or two to say the in the consideration, obviously, of the document as you have packed it and then you accommodate it as soon as it's permissible. And I'm sorry that it could be part of the packages of all the documents that gets adopted. The slide 8, which is dealing with the challenges, I think it's more about the future, which is indicative to say NEMISA is 10 years old now, and then obviously going forward, those issues are issues that they are presenting for discussion. The shareholder has engaged and met with NEMISA and will be involved in the discussion in this current financial year before the next, to then begin to look at its mandate, its focus, as indicative in the document itself, but also the legal status and those issues that they are raising there. And then see how we position NEMISA. There's still space for it in the digital environment with a lot of televisions going to do multi-channels. The 60% local content ought to be achieved one way or the other, and NEMISA ought to position itself in terms of those many multi-channels that will come in the ETV and also in the SABC, including the new community radio stations. I think there's this ambitions that all municipalities will need to have the community radio stations. And if you count all municipalities, there are about 250 or so municipalities in the country. So if with the release of the spectrum that will then be available with the digitalization of the TV, and then indeed that is the goal of the nation. So NEMISA ought to position itself now in order to start developing those skills that will then be occupying those particular centers that will be now spreading all over the country. And so therefore the discussions in the slide number 8, indeed we did identify them and will be having a very serious engagements going forward and presenting something that takes us forward in terms of those particular challenges. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Thanks, Chairperson. We'll see you when we come back from the recess after election, after the death of Jesus Christ. It will be after. But well, it will be up again, so you'll be tired. Okay, it's fine. But no, we will engage them in terms of the work which you must go and do. I think one other issue which I might add is that when we're dealing with DOC, it becomes apparent that community radios and so on is a stepchild with no actual mother. And we need to resolve that particular issue so that we find a home and a caring mother for community broadcasters and your radios and so on, because you find them all over. Everyone is talking about them. MDDA is talking about them. You go to the OC is talking about them. Yourself, we are talking about ICASA. So, no, it can't be too much for this child. It's too much exposed to many parents and who are not behaving the same and caring the same and so on. So we must deal with that impasse. So, but thanks very much. We'll communicate to you when possible. We can look to your outstanding work. You start to take us through. Welcome, Chairperson and your team. We'll give you time. We are quite aware that we might not finish. Then we will proceed after lunch if we don't finish. I'm not sure what miracles we can do to finish, but maybe to save time, you can just take us through, introduce your team, and then you just go to the document and so.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Luimo Ashudi. I'm the Chairperson of the Board of USASA. With me, I'm with the member of the board, Professor Sean Parther, who is the Chairperson of Finance and Business Development. And then, along my side, I've got the CEO, Mr. Phineas Mulele, and I've got Mr. Mulifi Mullo, who is the Executive Manager responsible for Business Development. Next to him, I've got the CFO, Mr. Andrew Slubi. And then, at the back, I've got Executive Manager responsible for Performance Management, Tanega Mngadi. And then next to her, I've been joined by Ms. Ari Khlobla, who she's our company secretary. And then at the back, I've got our program manager and the administrator responsible for the Western Cape operations. Chairperson, without any waste of time, the board and the management and the staff of USASA would like to thank the honorable members of the portfolio committee for affording us the opportunity to make this presentation. And again, Chairperson, we would like to thank the presence of the Deputy Minister and our colleagues from industry. I'm aware, we have realized they are here with us. Chairperson, we are not going to waste time. We are going to make sure that we base our presentation, which is an executive summary of the business plan that we have just presented to us. What we're going to present is the continuation of what we did present it earlier last year to you, because when you came here last year, I think it's around about March, I think things were not in order to SASA, but we did make some promises that we are going to turn the USASA around. And one of the things that we did promise was to come up with the a new organizational structure, which is the governance model and administrative model that is going to talk to each other. And we did make some promises that in the process there's going to be a turnaround processes or the migration process in terms of making sure that USASA deliver up to its deliver according to its own mandate. And then we did make some promises that in order for us to achieve that, we will make sure that as USASA we are going to make sure that we strengthen our relationship with the stakeholders. We are going to make sure that our presence is shown at the provinces by making sure that we appoint program managers in all the provinces and administrators, and making sure that we've got some offices. Without any waste of time, Chairperson, the contents in front of on the screen there, we are going to deal with the overview of USASA, but we are not going to take much time. We are going to address the key priorities of the South African government, the key priorities of the Minister of Communication, alignment with DOC strategic objectives, USASA approach to the 2011-2012 business plan, and the USAF baseline. USAF is a universal service and access fund baseline project, and USASA baseline operational and research projects. And then the next will be the key steps. And then as part of our business plan, we have attached an annexure A, which is the provincial projects that were presented to us by the provinces, which needs an additional funding. I think it's page 71 of our business plan. And then, no, of the business plan. The business plan. Of the business, the main business plan. Yeah, Chairperson, this is the structure. The structure, according to the governance model structure that we presented to the committee early last year, I think even on our last presentation, our appearance to the committee late last year, we did present the structure. But this is the structure that we believe that will take us forward as you suffer. And yes, it's true, it is taking us somewhere. And then, Chairperson, we are presenting here the board members of USASA, and then we've got the two board members whom their contracts ended in July, and then we are still waiting for the department to fill up those vacant posts. Chairperson, we're therefore presenting the status of our executive management. And then one of other things that we did promise the board last year, we said we will make sure that we fill up the stability in the organization. The CEO was appointed, I think he took an office on the 1st of May, and then other managers respectively took offices from May, June, July. And then one of the commitment that we did, we said we will address the issue of gender, because I remember that stage that there was a concern from the members. So when you check our agenda, it did balance, but unfortunately we had some resignation on the position of the corporate services, which has been vacant, but the position has been advertised, and we were supposed to have some interview about 2 weeks ago, but due to the process of this business plan processes and meetings with the minister and all those, we had to postpone, but hopefully immediately after the holidays and after the holidays, we are going to interview the incumbent. But the person who resigned, it was she. Sorry. Yeah, it has to be she. And she was she. She was a she. Okay, on a lighter note. Chairperson, this is USASA mandate, and then in terms of the ECA 2005, as USASA, we strive to promote the goal of universal access and universal service and make a recommendation to enable the minister to determine the what constitutes universal access, universal service, and under service area, and then conduct the research into and keep abreast of ICT trends. Survey and evaluate the extent of achievement of universal service and access. Then we make policy recommendation to minister and regulator. Continuously evaluate effectiveness of ECA in respect to achieving universal service and universal access. Yeah, Chairperson, our mandate again is to manage the USAF, subsidize needy person for the cost of provision, stroke use of electronic communication services, licenses for construction or extension of electronic communications network services in under-service areas, schools and colleges for provision of electronic communication services and access to electronic communication network services, training and allowances to operators of centers, competitive tender for universal service and access projects in under-service area in order to roll out infrastructure and services by the licensees. Yeah, Chairperson, there has been some challenges in the past, and then out of those challenges, we were limited in taking the leadership of universal service access and the role. And then no optimal support systems and processes to sufficiently support the core, and then did not have an established partnership model. In this instance, I think my colleagues will allude to that. How did we manage more or less to start establishing some partnership models? Because we have managed one of the weaknesses and the challenges that we have realized that USASA has been there, but USASA was not known to the provinces, even local municipalities, even the political leadership in those provinces. So we have made some inroads in terms of making sure that we interact with every premier, and we did make sure that we interacted with the even MEC responsible for ICT in those particular provinces. Up to now, at least we know exactly what is happening in the provinces, what is their ICT or electronic telecommunication or broadcasting plans. And then one of the concerns, we're involved in doing projects instead of leading projects. And then the other concerns was business units were not properly coordinated, thus not optimizing our skills and capabilities. Our model did not incorporate the advantages of trends arising from the best practice. The structure was not aligned to the new mandate. And then we had an implementer role. Yeah, Chairperson, we did came up with a vision and a mission, and I think we did present it last year here. But I will hand it over to the CEO, and the team. We will be assisted by the team. Thank you, CEO. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will do something new, which is upward referral. And ask Prof. Perth that you continue the slides for me. Thank you.
Are you in a SABC studio where they do up?
It's a new term we learned, Chair. Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to the honourable members. Good morning to the Deputy Minister. So, as to pick up from the Chairperson of the Board, honourable members, that given the constraints in the previous decade approximately of the existence of USASA, around 2009, the Board sat down and reflected on those constraints, began to highlight and in retrospect and reflect what we needed to do. And based on that, that was the new plan that the agencies presented here last year. And in terms of the new outlook, the vision of the agency is that by 2020, and we set a 10-year vision, that with its partners, USASA will have created for every man, woman, and child, whether living in the remote areas of the Kalahari or in the urban areas of Gauteng, opportunity to connect, speak, explore, and study using ICT. Our mission, honorable members, flowing from the vision then, is to facilitate and maintain universal service and access to ICT services to all South Africans in partnership with other stakeholders to achieve on the inclusive information society. I must just add on that. It is difficult for the agency to have just set that mission and vision in recognizing our core mandate. And as alluded to by the chairperson, the key issue of the stakeholder model, because if you look at the Act and what is our scope of our mandate in terms of access and service, but on the other hand, that on its own doesn't lead to the development. And so therefore our stakeholders, the partnerships, became key. And you would see as we go through the business plan for this year how fundamental the partnerships have been woven into our activities. So in the new plan, honorable members, the strategic objectives of USASA are to provide universal service and access strategy, policy, and leadership. And you'll find that these objectives are more aligned or more closely aligned with all of the key aspects as the agency is mandated to in the Act in Chapter 14. To facilitate interventions in ensuring affordable and equitable access and usage, monitor and evaluate the efficient and effective management of the fund, to achieve project-based organizational excellence, and to facilitate multi-sectoral networks towards improving the profile of universal service and access. Based on that, then, honorable members, we formulated a new operating model. And on the left-hand side, if you look at the slides, the operating model there is aligned with the constraints that we reflected and identified. So from 2010, the agency has been gearing itself to move away from a legacy focus to become a custodian of an integrated strategy and towards a 2020 vision. And rather than being an implementer, because that was one of the key failings of the agency in the first 10 years or so, focusing on implementing projects without any context, that we are now gearing ourselves to be a leader and facilitator of universal service and access in the country. And rather than just talking, we are now working with partners and working more as a network organization. And instead of doing ad hoc research, we now have a more integrative research strategy, and we aim to be a knowledge hub and to generate knowledge and research related to universal service and access, and such knowledge aligned to our strategy. And rather than just doing projects on global members, the agency now, as you will see, is that we're now managing our projects through a project management office, that's the PMO, and in collaboration with stakeholders. So our focus is not just to do the work, but we see this is key in terms of a multi-stakeholder network. And whereas there have been several instances in which the agency has not been able to spend its fund, we are now have focused spending within a new operating model. And as you will see at the end of our presentation today, that there's so much to do, and we will spend all of our funds, and there's still yet more, and we are seeking more funds. Honourable members, then that led us led us to looking at the whole environment in one picture as presented to you. And you'll see that this environment firstly helps us to understand exactly where the agency is positioned in terms of the national landscape in respect of universal service and access. Who are all the players? And if you look at where USASA is positioned, it's indicative firstly of the funding that comes in through the operators of 0.2% through Treasury and the relationship between USASA and the Universal Service Fund, our relationship with our shareholder and the Minister of Communications, and that USASA then sees itself on two key pillars, that of solution development first and foremost, and in terms of solution development with key stakeholders as reflected there, forging relationships with universities, industry, CSIR, Department of Education, that we become a knowledge hub dissemination, and that our projects and our activities are led by research and intelligence. And that would lead us to solution implementation, and that the model we're looking at to achieve the goals of universal service and access and digital divide is a build, connect, service, and support board, and support model. That we acknowledge that from the build perspective, there are new players, and in particular, the government entities, Centec, Infraco, the metros and provinces are now all players in terms of building our network, and we see them as key stakeholders in what we have to do. In addition to the profits and the operators from the build perspective, but we see ourselves being involved from a solution implementation, the connect service and support sides. And on the left-hand side of this picture, honorable members, you would see all the other, the key stakeholders that have a role in what we have to play in terms of quality access, affordable and sustainable solutions. So this then is a comprehensive picture of the environment and the way we see our role in the environment. Honorable members, when we were here towards the latter part of last year, this was a picture we presented to you, and so we're going to use this then as a point of departure as we launch into the contents of the business plan. You would remember on the right-hand side that we had a stream of activities that lent itself to repositioning USASA, to gearing ourselves to undertake our new focus as per the corporate plan. And so we had a USASA strategy. We were involved in activities last year around the organizational structure, realignment around the new focus, and organizational projects, which included an organizational culture alignment, effective performance management, etc. But much of last year we spent in strengthening and getting the machinery ready so that we can deliver in terms of that corporate strategy. Honorable members, in the center, we then pointed out to you that whilst we were doing that, we are still continuing to deliver on our mandate in terms of universal service and access. And the key projects that were on our table in the past financial year included the handover, and I use the word handover in inverted commas, and the CEO will explain that more in more detail. The handover project, which focused on legacy projects and making them sustainable, the rapid deployment of public access facilities in underserviced areas, a competitive bidding broadband project, and the broadcasting digital migration project focused on that of the subsidy model for set-top boxes. We will explain and expand on those as we get into the business plan. And honorable members, on the left-hand side of the slide, we reported on the key intelligence gathering projects that the agency had embarked on. That in particular, there were three: the definitions project, honorable members, which we concluded in 2009, which were gazetted in 2008. The definitions project set for us nationally an important framework in which all role players can begin to be attended to the mandate regarding the digital divide. We are still awaiting from the definitions projects for ICASA to declare underserviced areas. The definitions of universal service and access have been gazetted. There is a slight technical hitch, as been pointed out by the NAB, and so that is going to need needs to be fixed up. And we're also trying to fast track right now with the minister the definition of needy persons, which has been submitted as an outcome of that project. Honourable members, in the financial year that has passed us, we've concluded with a national universal access and service strategy. We've just concluded with that. It's a key piece of work, hoping to set a bedrock for the country around U.S. universal service and access. As soon as the board gives its final approval and we hand it to the minister, we will engage in a national public consultation exercise so that strategy finds ownership across all government entities, provinces and communities in the country. And lastly, regarding the Universal Service and Access Fund, to date it has been operating in a vacuum. It hasn't been clear to everybody in terms of how do we access funds there, how do you approach the agency, and so that project also has just been concluded as a waiting sign-off, in which we will publish then a set of standard operating procedures so that everybody in the country, all the stakeholders, will understand the funds and the mechanisms by which there'll be standard mechanisms by which the fund can be accessed. So, honourable members, with that, and that brings us to where we left it at last year, I'd like to hand over to the CEO to take us through the route we took in terms of the business plan and the key projects therein. Thank you.
Thanks, Prof. And thanks again for accepting the airport referral. Morning, honorable members, morning, Deputy Minister, and colleagues from the industry and also from NEMISA. If I was given the opportunity to present, I would have summarized with the following numbers. On the objectives, I would have said 1, 5, 10, and you will then have to then figure the next one. It will be support 8, 10, 2, 0, 1, 5, 2 at 2114 and 100 of 2020. Where do we start? Then we start with 5. Okay. If I had to give you an opportunity to speak in numbers. This chair reminds me of a conversation of somebody who says, there's a 9 that has gone into the 6-9. When it comes out, please play 5. I want to hold it with a 24. If you decode the numbers, Chair, it will be that there's a lady that's gone into the lady.
You see, we are talking in tongues, you see, that's the problem.
That's
what are you saying exactly?
Thank you, Chair, I'm happy. If it was a statement, it means that the lady that's gone into the ladies' room, if she comes out, please hold her busy, I'll come and want to talk to her. But the 1-5-10 means that... Yes, I'm not getting into trouble with him.
I'll clearly ask her until you talk.
So the next slides are that the president has given us one vision as a country that we must be able, that we could be all work towards it. The 5 that I spoke to is the 5 priorities that the government has given us that we must work from. The 10 will be the areas of focus that we have been given as outcomes. And these are reflected in a number of documentation that we have. For us to be talking about government is that there's 5 priorities that we've spoken about giving to the vision of the country, that there must be job creation, education and skills development, healthcare, rural development, fight against crime and corruption. Now, the 12 that will come out would be the delivery agreement that the ministry has signed up with the president to say, in particular, there's output 1 that talks about improving competition and regulation. Also output 6 and 5. Now we have to also look into ourselves as to how do we contribute to the delivery agreement. With you, you will have a corporate plan that was done in 2009. It precedes a lot of these issues that we're speaking about before the priorities were given. Also, you would have the business plan that follows from an MTEF approach. Now, when you consider the documentation before you, you should consider that we were an organization that tried to get itself out of being just a telecenter organization with a minimal focus. So you would have to work out with how our logic was. We wanted to understand the baseline, because the baseline has not changed. we work from a baseline that increased by 5 to 10% every year. Now, for us to make a dent in to make a contribution, it means we must go to basics. So I'm going to just go back to one or two slides backward with indulgence on, because it's very key that we go through this. For us to be, as my chairperson spoke earlier on, it is, if we strive to promote the goal of universal service and access and make recommendations to enable the minister to determine what constitutes universal service and access, that we did as a task and that we have delivered on it. On the 8th of Feb 2010, we had this document published by the then minister, Transpuriniano, because it gives us a basis upon what is universal service, what is universal access in a converged environment. In it, we put targets that we aspire that everyone that considers this in a policy target should be, that you have communities that up to a community of 2,000 to 10,000 people have an access to a communal center. Secondly, that they must have access to make a call at the most convenient space. And the ITU regulation, ITU standard was at 5 kilometers, wanted to take it down to 500 meters from the home. So meaning there must be a communal point. We have to make sure that we make policy recommendations to the minister and the regulator. Again, we went and decided, we worked and made a needy categories of persons. This is an instrument upon which we can respond to the needy categories of people. To the regulator, what we've done is that we've then came up with the principles of what is an under-service data, what is in how you should consider it. And we came up with a view that an under-service data is three categories of space. It is an area where there is no communication infrastructure at all. We must then decide, do we prioritize those areas? Two, it is an area where there is infrastructure but is not sufficient for the needs of that area. For this, we refer to where you might find 2G or GPRS if it's on a wireless space, but then you don't have a 3G facility. Or it is an area, the third category, it is an area where there is some connectivity but is not sufficient to cover the rest of the communities. This normally it is a pattern of design by the mobile operators at the time to then, you know, plan around the route that you travel. And I know I'm speaking to the converted because all of you, most of you come from rural areas. In actual fact, every holiday people find you there. That's when the frustration starts to come in, that you find there is connectivity up to your point. There is an ADSL line up to your point. I thought it was important that you go back to these basics because this enables what USASA should then do. It means that we must be able to do a competitive tender for the industry and everyone else to come through to USASA and say we would want to cover the areas. These are key points that I felt that we should talk to and go back to them and say, how do we attend to the needy persons? Who are those needy persons? Who has categorized them? So we are happy that the ministry will be engaged in a workshop to go and unpack some of these things that we are talking about. That how do we get licensees to come through for the construction of extension of networks? The USAF manual helps you to then say, in a USAF manual, this is a process that you should follow. You will then be able to follow that. Secondly, that you could put up a competitive tender, and it requires us and ICASA to be able to put up the competitive tender. For which areas? Then the list that ICASA is busy with will be the list upon which members would have had a view of, members would have known the rationale for categorizing areas. Then we're able to then have a focused approach. Because now what we normally do is to do piecemeal, do as and when we are able to do that. I felt that it was important that you go back to the basics and say, this is where we are. We have not made a dent to the baseline. Now, how are we dealing with the baseline? We first started with doing a project called Universal Service and Access Strategy. We've interviewed some of the members here. We interviewed industry. We've interviewed a number of provincial departments. In it, wanted to then start to lay a foundation to say, well, how do we respond? And I'm happy that the project that I'm going to speak to will be able to be presented to the ministry to take it forward and have engagement and inclusive of yourselves. Secondly, we also did that the USAF manual draft is going to be finalized and be agreed to by the board, and then we can then share it with both the ministry in the workshop and then from the decide on the way forward on those. Those are key projects that make us to ground how we respond to the nation. Now, coming back to where we are, on the output of the delivery agreement, Mr. Kekana, I have a slides that are here that I've blocked some up. Again, and I always just to give a description. On the left, I give a delivery agreement, which is gleaned from the performance agreement of the minister. On the right, then I'll speak to what is it that we've contained. It is that under output, we've noted as ECA amendment, the ICASA amendment, and how do we respond to those? We have placed some of the challenges that we have in a business plan. I just don't have the page number, but we've said we've raised these issues of ICASA's challenges relating to the business plan. But in terms of the corporate plan, we've done a personal analysis where we are saying, first of all, the composition of the board as a first point. How is it constituted? How do you manage it? What representation would you want it to be? Is it effective in the manner that it's been set up? That's the first critical approach that we said that we must then have a view on. Secondly, it will be the relationship between us as a Schedule 3A, which does not have a shareholder compact with the executive authority. How would we relate that we must tighten up certain relations? Because we see ourselves as an implementing portion or a facilitator of the department's broader mandate that they have, and also pulling in other stakeholders, be it provincials or any stakeholders that come from the private sector. In terms of the ICASA Act, actually, in the EC as well, is that we are given a mandate to manage the fund. Yet we see it going past us because it goes to be collected by ICASA. ICASA, in terms of Section 15 of the ICASA Act, then says all monies received by ICASA shall be taken to National Treasury, National Revenue Fund. When it sits there, it is a pool for the nation. It's not ring-fenced. Now, sometimes I feel like we are working, like when they say, there comes the chairman of ICASA, I feel like he's working lottery. He's a man who's won a lottery. Everyone knows how much he has, but he doesn't. He does not know the numbers that he has won. And this is a view that we have as ICASA. Everyone thinks that we have the money. But if I say, how much do we have? I still need confirmation from Treasury. So these are the things that we think, with amendment, we'll be able to clarify ourselves to say, if the money was intended for the industry that it is collecting from, can the industry be the beneficiaries thereof so that you can then move up? And then also the ICASA amendment will be the provisions of Section 15 that money comes in, it goes, there must be a provision that deals with, if it is in relation to USAF, then there must be a mechanism that USAF shall be the one that first receives. Because we must check whether the money that we are receiving in the first place, is it the accurate figures that you are receiving? Who could tell? Because otherwise they provide that business financial. So we want just to make sure that all of us understand and upfront be transparent with it. Obviously, we are a proponent of integrated ICT framework. That we cannot overemphasize. We hope in the ministry will be able to deliver, because it's a nation requires this integrated approach. On output 5, it is communication information technology. Improve broadband to 256 through policy intervention. We're hoping that the country will also take a view that if 256 it is a priority now, in the future is it what is going to be needed? How futuristic are we that we'll make 256 now, but coming a year from now we have underserviced areas of a different kind, because we did not put ourselves to say the ambition is the country must be able to push and have an ambition and push the envelope, because we tend to be working around the available technologies now, not towards what the future should hold for all of us. So maybe we need to improve somewhat. And what is out there that we must look at? Increase broadband penetration from 2% to 50% by 2014. Now, this is what is some of the things that we would want to discuss with the department, to say, looking at the resources, look at the baseline allocation, looking at that we are now having under-service area declared, then we can work out as to that 10%, how many of the under-service areas are being neglected or being prioritized. We'd want us to get ourselves there. Output 6, develop a set of operational indicators for each segment, scheme for ownership support to poor TV-owning households, finalized and approved. That we cannot overemphasize. But what we take from the minister, and we are quite excited about, is the project dealing with this area needs a lot of focused discussion, because we come from a space where we are an enabler and facilitator for access to electronic communications, and that talks to all the elements of broadcasting as well as telecoms, those things that we must be able to deal with. Now, to go into this, we also take note that the business plan might not be talking to these priorities, because they came in November 11th, and we are hoping that we will, in our operational plan, capture some of these issues, because we're going to have a workshop with the ministry to close the gaps that we might have picked up. I mean, members note that you would have the ICASA presenting, you have NEMISA presenting. There are certain things that the ministry would be able to deal with these issues, because they're key. As to if your focus is building an integrated national broadband plan, and the DOC and the ministry being the custodians of policy, it means whatever that you are doing, whatever projects that we're talking to now, there must be a link that we are all talking to. And some of them might not be done overnight, but it's just which processes are leading us to it. I've already spoken about the definition of the universal service, universal access. It will influence the process. Definition of under-service data, it will influence the policy process. The definition of under-service data will influence the process. That we think that if we go in that particular point, we should be able to deal with it. Spectrum management, we have cited in our business plan that it is an unfunded portion. We wanted to research as to the impact of spectrum if you go to under-serviced areas. Now, when you go to under-serviced areas, there must be a synergy between who's doing the study. We understand there is similar study that might be conducted by other entities. I think the DOC, if not mistaken, or the ICASA, if I remember the business plan. We need to say that if it's not funded from our end, what influence do we have? But what common good are we working towards? What opportunities are going to come under spectrum management when we go through the migration process? The broadcasters will vacate that particular space. How do we fast track it? Are there opportunities? Are there not? So I'm hoping that we'll have more than a day with the ministry, because these are the issues that we'll speak to. Broadcast digital migration I'll speak to also as well. We note it as also minister's focus area. The priority areas, e-skills, USASA, where it's at now, it has engaged on e-skills institute. What we have and what is going to come out, not necessarily in this, it will be operational plan discussions, is that we are doing a pilot together with the e-skills in both the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. They're using some of our centers to look into how we can create hubs, because unlike them building, and I think Mr. Gagana spoke about it earlier, do not look at further building new structures, but to then locate that we have our centers being used as hubs. It's a pilot, and we're hoping that we'll share the outcomes with yourselves, honorable members. ICTs and rural development, we think the contribution that we're going to make under the policy on universal service, universal access, under service area, will make a contribution into ICT rural development. But key to this is an opportunity that DOC has given us, the PNC, that they have developed a strategy. How do we then take it up, that particular opportunity, to then plug in our efforts into it? E-connectivity and 2010 legacy, we'll speak to some of the projects that we're attending to in e-connectivity. What might be a bit of a challenge is the finalization of e-connectivity concept document and how we take it up in the future, but we'll speak about it. Local digital content, we note our challenges is that we provide the pipe, we also enable somebody to see the structure being a computer, but what sits on that is a value driver which we don't have. Now, we've been doing it in a manner that we've done it badly, because it was not part of our mandate to deal with it. So it requires that we find partners who put content. In a school environment, we're insisting with the Department of Education, you take care of the content, the outcome, what you want to achieve. How does it support teaching once we put in that computer? So that we have that synergies of, if you put in the infrastructure, who then takes over? And I'll talk about some of the discussions we've had with the provinces. Secondly, we've heard today NEMISA has opportunities of content that they could also plug into the centers that we are currently running. Then they can book that place in a remote site, wherever members have seen Kala site, that when you went up in the Eastern Cape. You've seen other in Kamalinga towards Chozini and Maputaland. You found some structures there. those communities are crying out for the type of initiatives that Nemisha spoke about on the content side, and then you can then transport maybe a skill to go help them out. We want those type of partnership. This is an infrastructure, the connectivity must be done. On international relations, we only now going to be getting ourselves, and CFO has prepared the subscription, is guaranteed that I get the subscription fees, to join CRASA. Because in the region, we in South Africa, we are the only institution that talks about universal service and universal access. So we are very jealous of that space. If ICASA speaks with us at CRASA, or maybe the DOC attends that function and speaks about our mandate without us, we want to be part of it so that we can be able to assist the organization. Because what you should look at it is, if we get the best practice right in South Africa on whatever that we do, and we have confirmed in Namibia that we are ahead of many of the SADC region members, it means our operators, it means our efforts, it means our approaches should be that we are providing a basis for them to operate better. If we take a best case in South Africa, MTN, Vodacom, who have investment in those SADC region, are able to transport it, and we can support as an institution. So there's direct correlation. In the ITU space, we were part of the planning potentially that took place last year, but what was the gap coming from where we were sitting? And I had the pleasure of having the chairperson of the board. We found that South Africa is not participating strongly in the subcommittees of the ITU relating to the mandate that we're dealing with. Secondly, stabilizing the indicators that South Africa provides. We seem to be having some indicators, and I looked at the indicators, I think we're short of 1 year, if not two. That is not should be and not be acceptable if we have all the resources to collate and position us better in that space. So that's on. And thirdly, we have been very strong participation in Commonwealth Telecoms Organization, wherein we actually sat in an inaugural executive committee as a second deputy chair to then make sure that all the rest of Africa is able to reflect on what it is that it can do under the mandate of universal service, universal access. I thought members should be able to then note these things, because what we have done in this slide, alignment to DOC strategies, Mr. Kagana, is that we have strategic goal that has been depicted in a slide that talks to DOC has said enable the maximum participation of investment in ICT sector for socio-economic development with focus on job creation. And we have a corresponding slide on the right which says strategic objective for ISASA, it is strategic objective 4, which is efficient and effective management of universal service and access fund. Now, there are certain, like I indicated, that when we go to the point of doing a operational plans or implementation plans, we'll be able to then correspond what it is that we'll be doing that will be able to support those. I will not belabor the point to read all those that we have highlighted, that we also speak to strategic goal 2 and 4 up to 8. Now, what did we do to look at the business plan? Our business plan, as we presented, relates to the baseline already allocated. So all the programs we're going to talk about are within the update approved baseline. But we've noted that if we have delivered on the definitions, if we have delivered on, we're about to then get the listing of the sites of underserviced area, and if we have delivered on scaling synergies from provinces, we've had the opportunity to sit with some of the provincial premiers just to go through what the ICT plans are. That's the first thing that we did. But what we then opened above that is to have a forum wherein all the provinces came and presented their ICT plans, all their ambitions. Some of them then came out to indicate that they don't have any strategy. Then you start to find where the logjam might be, where somebody then does not have that up to the date. So what we've done is we went through the provinces to present to us what are they doing on matters ICT, whether it's schools connectivity, whether it's just broadband, what it is that they do. So we took that information, and we then studied it, and then we put resources to go do site visit. And unfortunately, we pushed for time. We did it for over 2 days that they went in and took desktop meetings. But what we'll then say is we analyzed and we have a baseline approach to say these are the programs that we think they might be considered. That's why in a business plan you've got additional annexure that deals with additional information of projects. We need to contextualize. The costing thereof, however, has not been verified. These are just estimates. We've not went through and checked them up. But the point is, we would want to present to the committee that there is a need for funding to cover those projects. Some of them are quite key to the immediate goals of what government wants to achieve, and if we to put our heads together, then we're able to then say which one should be prioritized. So we're indebted to both the ministry where we presented this thought, and we're hoping that the workshop will be able to then be set what is the additional information, but also, as honorable members, opportunities you have during the budget discussions, would want you to take note, and we can provide the business plans of those areas. Now, this slide, my apologies that it looks very faint. It was not meant to rob you not to see. But it talks to money. But I think the point was to show how little we might have got, that we wanted to reflect how little it is. But to confirm here, Mr. Kakana, we have a table that talks about the program. It talks about 2010-2011 up to 2014. The first item that we put up is handover in e-connectivity, which I'll talk to now. The second, which with allocation that we've been given as request of a 7.5. Rapid deployment, I'll talk to you about the project now as well, is that we've been allocated in the previous financial year, it was 16.5. This financial year coming, or that we are in, is 19.8. Broadband infrastructure, we had thought we'd get 31.5 million. We've been allocated 9 million. Broadcast digital migration, we allocated 220 million, and that was provided. What we did not get as we made the request was on a project that we started with Meraga Institute, which was to look at smartphones for people with disabilities. The idea was to look at opportunity to test a concept of how smartphones could be able to assist people with disabilities, any form of disability that will be attended to. They have some solutions, so we wanted to provide enablement. That was not granted. TV access devices for people with disabilities, again, we had made some numbers that we were advised by them to then put up. But we're hoping that the summit that ICASA held recently on this topic should be able to have a sense of finding a home for us. E-connectivity, this was in accordance with the discussion with the Department of Communication as well as Department of Education. On e-connectivity, we found that the monies have not been allocated as requested. Now, I'd want to focus on the key projects, and maybe then we could have some sense of discussion. The project one, which is a big project for us in terms of the budget allocation, but in terms of readiness and everything else, we can talk about it. We are given that in the broadcast digital migration, that the purpose and objective of this is to plan for and prepare the agency to successfully fulfill its role of managing the STB subsidy disbursements to needy TV-owning households. Now, if you don't have a category of needy persons being defined, then it goes figure that you must make it to run parallel with this process. We've submitted, that's why we're hoping that it will be attended to with speed. Because in it, we're just saying, in the definition is any means of assessing a needy category of persons. There are different tests that are out there. The legal space use a different means test, as SASA would do another means test. Now, we need to stabilize ourselves. What is the means test that we all agree to, that which households will qualify? Because if you're saying 5 million households, when you look at job losses as well, what impact will they have to the 5 million households? And whether we'll not have an escalating number every year, how do we cap it? We need to then come up with, say, how do we categorize it and agree to it? Secondly, is that there must be a process and infrastructure for application, verification, communication, development of prototype, of a secure subsidy coupon and coupon distribution fund disbursed. This is a lot of back office support that you require. That will help you to say, here's a category of people that will be able to access the fund, to be assisted in the space. These are the challenges that you will have in the back office, that you might have double dipping by different people. You might have Mr. Eric Colwani appearing in Cape Town, as the needy, and then you have a Skumbuzo in a village appearing as needy. But when you look at the numbers, it's the same person. So how do we then close the gap? But over and above this, what we have done, and I'll talk to the challenges group, what we have done is that we readied ourselves on this process by making sure policy we have submitted, then we have a service provider that has worked up some documentation that will means test, which we would want to discuss, the system of distribution and the like. I will not believe that what has been given here, it's safe to indicate the following. Our discussion with the minister is this. The project of broadcast visa migration would not go anywhere if we don't have a singular approach to it by all that are invested, you know, parties. If USASA is only dealt with from a monetary point of view, it will not be able to do it on its own. Because the timing of every aspect that we do is dependent on what are the timelines of launch, what are the timelines of discussions and decisions on the set-top boxes. We need to be part of it. We are saying that also that perhaps the discussion that everyone has spoken to us about to say that box must be able, if it goes to a poor TV-owning household, to present more than broadcasting. How do we deal with it? Is it an opportunity that we could do? And if that's the case, which partners are required to join us and do that and maybe minimize some of the costs that might be coming through? Secondly, what opportunities are there for the subscription television market that is there? These are the discussions that we have. Because then the argument would be, if I go with my satellite dish to your space, it means that SABC 1, 2, and 3, ETV, free to air, I'll carry them nonetheless. So Sentech does not have to worry about not bringing any of those services. How do we locate those discussions, and when do we make the decisions? We think that if we take those discussions, we should be able to have it. Now, in the MTEF documentation, I'm not sure if members had it, we have listed some of those challenges, but the amount that has been given, the 180, let me speak to it. The past financial year, the 180, if you calculate that a set-top box costing 700 rands and you're supposed to do 70% subsidy, it means 490. But when you look at it, it means that we would have met 367,000 households against 5 million. So you have a shortfall. Go to the next financial aid, 220 million rands that has been given. So it gives another 468,000 boxes. So we have a shortfall of about 3 million plus. That we cover in the business, but that we did not have it. Secondly, being allocated the funding and the key decisions are not finalized keeps us to be not to have a very good relationship with Treasury, because we start to attract disclaimers to say, you've been given money, you are requesting rollover, we're requesting rollover, it's not in our bank, in our books, the 180. So it is, if we calculate the 180 plus the 220, that's 400 million, how do we then deal with it? Are the processes that the CAS has to take, are the decisions that have to be taken already in place? I was quite happy that in our discussion again with the ministry, it is an area they've identified that all these discussions that you're talking about would want to address them. And at the workshop coming on the 3rd, if not the 4th, as them to be corrected, we will be able to then have this discussion. But key to it, it is the after the workshop process as to what plan do we all have to achieve on the same goal? Who has to be lined up to have which key decisions? We really would want to have this project to be viewed in that particular light, that we are doing we are contributing in terms of us relating to it based on what comes under the box, but key policy decisions were indebted to all partners that have to make decisions. When Sentech goes out there and says it has covered 33%, it covers Gauteng, Tshwane, maybe another metro, if we start there, would we not have another argument that says, again, you're starting with the areas which are overserved? How do we then look at it in other areas? We need to just oppose all these possibilities and come up with a view that says, how do we move forward? So that by 2015, how do we make sure that everyone can switch off, as we have said to do? infrastructure broadband.
Maybe before you start another topic, we have to break for lunch. We'll proceed when we come back. I understand the Deputy Minister also has to leave for an engagement, a prior engagement. But we are thankful that you have taken your time to come and be with us. Okay. We have prepared lunch in the old assembly, dining hall. So I'm told that there's lunch prepared. I'm sure the staff will assist the visitors how to get there. But I'm told that they've arranged for only 25 people. It means the first 25 will be the one which is going to go through. If we are out of the 25, you may have to make your special case to be here at first and be adjudicated for you to get food and so on. But there is that food arranged in the all assembly, dining hall. Let us break, then we will have to resume again here at 2, I suppose, after the lunch and so on. And when we come back, we'll be having only 30 minutes. We have finished your first part, you have only 30 minutes to complete everything. Thank you. We'll meet at 2.